is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it.
Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyron Brooks.
Tyron on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He gonna come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins. Touchdown, Buffalo!
McCoy, punch to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive. This is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hi, everyone. Welcome into the John Murphy Show. Sal Capaccio filling in for a second straight day. I'll be here all week with Donald Jones. He's here all the time. Donald, good to see you. And before anything gets said on this show, I got to give you props.
Thank you.
You called the Home Run Derby champion yesterday, a guy we both wanted to win. But to be honest with you, I didn't want to jinx my man, Aaron Judge, but you were all in. You knew he could handle the pressure of Donald Jones picking him.
That's right. He can handle that. I mean, if you can wear those pinstripes down in the Bronx, you can handle any pressure, you know, and you can perform like he's performed halfway through the season, and you can go into a home run derby and hit bombs over 500 feet like he was doing last night. It was crazy what he did last night.
And yesterday, you brought up, you know, rookies winning the home run derby. I forgot to bring this up. I'm going to do it right now. One of our trustworthy producers out there, all these guys have different titles. I don't know what Tom's actual title is, but Tom Hollander sent me a note yesterday. In 1986, Wally Joyner of the California Angels hit 4 home runs and tied with the National League's Darryl Strawberry for the most in the Derby. That's when they went to this a different type of format back then, obviously. That, I guess, would be the rookie deal that he's talking about there. So good job on that research. But for a rookie to do what Judge did yesterday was pretty impressive. Right. So did you watch it? Did you watch the whole thing?
I only got to watch him. I was watching something.
Did you care about watching anybody else?
Not really.
Me neither, right? I watched Gary Sanchez.
Right.
He's a Yankee.
I didn't get to watch. I was watching something else. I can't remember what. Oh, I was watching a movie called The Circle.
What is that about?
The Circle is about this young girl who gets a job at this company that's kind of like Apple.
Okay.
And they create these cameras, and it's really all about like privacy, and they have these little cameras that they put everywhere and nobody has any privacy.
Wow.
It was a good movie.
I'm going to write this down. The Circle. This sounds like an interesting movie that I need to go watch.
It was.
Not like The Ring. The Ring was a scary movie,
No.
This is The Circle.
This is totally different.
It's
about the
it.
Government and privacy
right.
and stuff like that.
Like
and I was watching that instead of watching the Home Run Derby, and then I saw people start to tweet about Aaron Judge coming up, so I turned them on real quick.
All right. Well, Tom Hollander's our graphics producer. Thank you for telling me that, Jay Harris. So you flipped it back on, Home Run Derby. You saw Aaron Judge. He is the monster swing and the monster baseballs he was hitting. It just incredible. I was so mesmerized by some of these swats. But the other ones, he was going to right field like effortlessly.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that. I literally thought, Donald, on a few of them, he's getting tired. And then I'm like, wait a minute, that ball went out.
That ball went out. It's crazy. to
How
hit.
Did he do it?
I don't know. I mean, you've had to play baseball to understand to hit home runs opposite field is not an easy thing to do. I mean, it's hard. And I can't remember how deep that park is opposite field. But for him to make it look so – his socks are crazy. But for him to make it look so effortlessly, it's just crazy. And I saw people start to tweet about, you know, different things, like you need to test them or whatever. But the kid is big, man. He's a big kid, strong kid. And he was hitting bombs last night.
Yeah. He's always been. I mean, I don't blame anyone that views any – athlete, really, but especially baseball home run hitter these days under suspicion. I just don't.
Yeah,
I don't blame anybody.
So that's the
climate we live in, right?
Right.
But the good Yankee fan of me and the good, hey, I know all about this kid and how good of a citizen he is and the upbringing he's had, I don't want to believe in that.
Right.
And to be honest with you, I think we've come a long way in baseball where it just doesn't seem like that's really as prevalent now unless these guys are really doing a lot of things and getting away. It's a whole other topic, but I don't want to go down that road. I think, to me, he's clean, he's doing it right, and I'm really happy that he's on my team.
I hope so. I'm happy he's on the Yankees as well and not on some other team. It's been a while since the Yankees truthfully have had anything to cheer about.
That's right. Now, this year they have until the last couple of weeks, so we'll
see
how
still in second place.
The break treats them after the break, but we are in the All-Star break, so this is always one of the really cool trivia questions I ask people every year. If you haven't heard this, many people have, but if you haven't heard this, you can stump this to your friends at a bar tonight, all right? Name the 2 days every calendar year, Donald, the 2 dates every year, doesn't matter, where there are no Major League Baseball games, NBA basketball, NHL hockey, or NFL football. Every year, the same 2 days, there are no games. Now, there may be one or two that just happens like that, but no matter what, there are no actual games in baseball, football, basketball, or hockey on these 2 days every single year. What are they?
Like no All-Star, games. No nothing.
No games. That's right. No All-Star game. Nothing.
I don't know.
The day before and the day after the Major League Baseball All-Star game. Every team was off last night. Every team will be off on Thursday night. And no other sport is in season. That's
right.
It.
Right.
That's it. Those are the only 2 days of the whole year we don't get a sport.
Yeah. You know, it's summertime when you turn on ESPN and there's like tennis on in the morning. And golf is huge. I mean, golf is huge anyway, right. But those are like the only two things that are on TV for you to watch.
No doubt.
It's like, man, like football season needs to hurry up and get here.
And speaking of that, we had a couple things going on with football season. Number one is we will have some football being played this week and at the end of the week, next week, in a game form, which is the Spring League. Now, this is a development league for players who basically want to hook on with teams. I'm not totally positive if it's just guys who played in the league or guys who are trying to break in. I think it's a mix of both, but we will find out because we will have the CEO of the Spring League, Brian Woods, on with us today at 2 p.m. That's a pretty interesting deal. Now, would that be something you would have done? Let's say your career didn't end the way it did. Let's just say that, you know, you were out there, you were looking for work, you wanted to get back and things like that. Would you be interested in doing something like that to showcase your talents, or would you rather just kind of do the circuit to kind of go work out for teams individually?
I think I'd rather go up to Canada. To be honest with you, you know, because that's not that this is not a legit thing, but that's a league that has been in place for a long time. You can go up there, you can make some money. I think I'd rather do that than to play in a game like that, you know, just not knowing. I think you can go up there and showcase your talent and still get paid to do it. You know,
you can. And by the way, you have an extra advantage. You, a good friend of yours, Naaman Roosevelt, is doing that. You know how really that can provide for a good life and a chance to play some football.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, I'm happy that he's had a chance to go up there, and he's the man now. You know, he bounced around the NFL a little bit, and then he eventually found his way up to Saskatchewan, and now he's doing his thing up there. He's getting all types of endorsement deals and everything for him. You know,
Great, so I'm happy for him.
Great
for him. It's a really nice way to do that. The other thing about football starting soon is, believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, we are 10 days away from the very first training camp opening, and that would be the Arizona Cardinals, because they play in the Hall of Fame game against the Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys are 11 days away, so Arizona on the 21st, Dallas on the 22nd. Hmm. Pretty amazing. Donald, hashtag, where has summer gone?
I don't know where summer went, but it's gone.
At least for
people,
here, right?
At least for people like us who work in this thing and the players that are coming back for practice, summertime is done. You have a couple more days, you know, for everyone else. Like teachers and things like that, you know, they have some time before they have to go to work. But for all of us that actually work in football, summertime is done.
10 days from now, the Arizona Cardinals will be at it. We will have NFL training camps open. Of course, the Buffalo Bills open their camp on July 27th at St. John Fisher in Rochester, actually Pittsford, which is right near Rochester. And you can have that entire schedule. You can see it, buffalobills.com, also WGR550.com. You can check out all the dates of all the practices for the Bills for the 2017 training camp. Steve Tasker is going to be with us today, 1 to 2 p.m. He'll be here in studio. We're going to pick Steve's brain on the AFC East because, as you all know, Steve is an analyst for both CBS Television and Monday Night Football. I think it's Sunday night or Monday night. I think he does Monday night games, right? Westwood won Monday
Steve,
night games.
Yeah. I believe he's
is it Sunday or Monday. I'll have to get with. I think it's
Monday.
Yeah,
we have to ask him.
I think it's Monday night games. He does, but we'll make sure. I should know that, but I don't. But he does radio and TV, obviously, national games. He's very plugged into the American Football Conference, so we'll ask him about the East, the Jets, the Dolphins, the Patriots, some storylines, where they are, and we'll get into some other things regarding the Buffalo Bills. Obviously, some news yesterday, Adolphus Washington, it was announced and released that he had been arrested near Cincinnati on a charge that involved a weapon, but we don't know all the details of this as of yet, and the team has released a statement. The Bills have. If you want to read that statement, you can obviously go to WGR550.com. There's a story there, and we're going to wait for all the facts to kind of sort themselves out. We'll wait for Sean McDermott to come back and training camp to start to see exactly how the Bills will play this, but obviously that story is out there, and the Bills have released a statement about the Adolphus Washington situation. Donald Jones with me, Sal Capaccio, today. And, Donald, I want to get into newcomers when speaking of training camp. But how do you form newcomer? We got one guy on this poll I'm going to read you who's not really a newcomer to the team, but he will be making his debut on the field, hopefully, for the Bills in 2017. And that is Reggie Ragland. He's part of a four grouping of players, four players in a grouping on the poll that we posed. And this poll is great, and I say that because it is really, really close, and it's going to be close. Look at this. It's going to be close all day, I think. Here's the poll. Which player making their Bills debut in 2017 will have the biggest impact this season? The choices are Micah Hyde, Tre'Davious White, Zay Jones, Reggie Ragland. Now, you could go with other like Steven Hauschka, Patrick DeMarco, someone like that. I get it. But these are the four that we identified that are probably going to have the biggest impact on the team. And you know what? It is really, really close. Let me read you the percentages here. Zay Jones getting 27%, Tre'Davious White and Reggie Ragland both at 25, Micah Hyde at 23. This is a really close poll, which means this is a good topic to talk about because we can go through this. Now, we touched on a lot of these guys yesterday, but we should talk about, like, really the difference between having them and not having them from last year to this year and what they could do this year. I think this is a really interesting poll because you could really kind of go anywhere with this, couldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely go anywhere with this. I think so many people sleep on the defensive problems that we had last year, you know? And for me, I still have to go back to a guy like Micah Hyde. I mean, if I was voting in this poll, it would be Micah Hyde. And the reason being, for the same reason we talked about yesterday, his position flexibility is crazy. You know, he can play safety strong and free. He can come down, play the slots in the nickel. Oh, and by the way, he can go out and cover your number one receiver. You know, so I think when you have a guy like that who has done it and been on the team like the Green Bay Packers, played in the biggest stage, played in some of the biggest games, and been productive in that defense, in a defense that really wasn't good and hasn't been good for some time. He was like the one shining bright star out there on the defensive side of the ball for Green Bay for the last couple of years. And you have a guy like that that can come in and do so many different things. I think he makes the greatest impact.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a really, really important player. We talked yesterday, and in case you missed it, about the nickel scheme and what they call big nickel. And ironically, in Carolina, what Sean McDermott called it was the Buffalo nickel, I believe.
Did he?
He called it Buffalo. Buffalo nickel, I believe, is what they called it.
Wow.
And now he's going to bring it to Buffalo, of course.
Why?
Because it, I don't know, Buffalo, big Buffalo, I guess. Hmm. I don't know, that's why. But maybe because of Buffalo nickel? I mean, coins, right? I don't know, but that's what they called it.
That's kind of how they do these things. When they make up these plays and the names, they come up with something that's like, oh, a Buffalo nickel.
What was the weirdest maybe audible or name or something like that you guys had while you were in the NFL that someone said, we're just going to call it this? Was there a...
It was nothing really weird. It all made sense. You know, if it was a running play to the right, the word had an R in it. If it was a running play to the left, it had an L in it. You know, it really made sense. It wasn't anything weird. I can't remember off the top of my head.
They didn't say, like, Mickey Mouse or something like that?
No, I can't. Anything like that.
Like, Mickey, you didn't have, like, Ndamukong as an audible or something like that?
No, it was mostly just states, you know,
see,
mascots.
States, but that's cool. See? See, here's the thing. As a player, you think that's normal. The people who are listening do not think that's normal, just so you know.
Oh,
they think that's cool. Like, what do you mean a state? What do you mean by that?
So if it was something like if it was Texas or let's just say Carolina, well, Carolina has an L and an R, but the R in Carolina kind of sticks out, so it would be a play going to the right,
okay,
you know, something like that.
So that would be an audible, so let's say Fitz would come to the line.
Mm-hmm.
And he would
Carolina,
go,
Carolina.
That means he's changed. Does that mean, like, we don't know if it's going to be left or right. Let's listen for the call at the line?
Right.
Okay,
right.
I got you.
One thing that you hear the Patriots do, I know the Patriots use animals, and it's usually like Jaguars, a run going to the right. Now, they might have changed it since I was there.
Sure.
But you will hear Tom Brady come up, and I remember sitting on the couch with a couple of my boys, and you know how sometimes when they're doing the audibles, you can hear.
You can hear them.
And he would come up to the line, and he'd say, Jaguar. And I'd go, that's a run to the right. And they run it. Run to the right.
That's great.
You know, they would do something like Lion, and it would be a run to the left, you know.
You think defenses would know that?
You would think so, yeah, but.
I mean, yeah, I remember last year, I'm sorry, maybe it was 2 years ago, on that Monday night game in New England, the Tom Brady audible was Rex Ryan. I mean, he literally yelled, Rex Ryan. You could hear him at the line go, Rex Ryan, Rex Ryan.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, that's got to be a slide protection to the right or a play to the right. That's what
you
I'm
would
thinking.
You would think so, right?
I mean, I don't know. So. Maybe you're trying to trick him up, but to me, that means, and I'm thinking, if it's a pass, it's probably sliding the protection to the right. That's what it would be, right?
And that's probably something that they made just that week, you know, Rex Ryan.
Oh, no doubt about it.
You know,
and you would change it up every week.
Right. It's like, oh, man, we're going to audible to this because this is – when we do this shift or this motion, they go into this defense, and so we're going to check to this. as an audible.
Right.
And they just made it up for that week, and we're going to call it Rex Ryan.
What about a formation? Give me a word. How would you term a formation? I remember when I played high school or I coached or whatever, we have simple things like rip and Liz. If you have rip, it's tight end on the right. Liz, tight end on the left, right?
Yeah.
Or wing right, wing left, something like that. That's you might have north and south. Yeah. North is you line up here on the right. Everybody's got their own spot. Mm-hmm. For some, north might be right.
So
south might be right.
We would have something like trips right.
Yep.
Which means that that's easy. So it would be that's the easy part of it, trips right. But then it goes into some hard stuff that I don't even remember.
Correct.
And it really there's like one or two words in there for everybody, which is it starts off with the lineman with their slide protections and stuff like that.
Okay.
And then it goes out back to the running back and then out to the wide receiver. So the play can be very long.
But you only pay attention to
your part of the play.
That's right. Yeah. A play is maybe 25 words in it.
Right.
You only need to know 5 words.
Exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
You need to know pretty much the formation, the route you're running, and the snap count. Or the blocking.
And to be honest with you, I don't even need to know the snap count because as a wide receiver, they always tell you, you should never jump off sides as a wide receiver. Now, I did it once here.
you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. You should never jump off sides because you're watching the ball. You're out there. You really can't hear them anyway,
right?
You know, especially if you're on the road. So you should just be watching the ball. So what I would usually do and Stevie would usually do is when the quarterback calls, when he calls the play and he tells us what exactly we have to do, I'm already running out of the huddle because we have the furthest to go as a wide receiver is to get to our position. Everybody else just walks up to the line of scrimmage. Wide receivers have to run all the way out to the sidelines, basically, you know?
Right.
So it was like you're hanging outside the huddle a little bit and you try to get over there as fast as you can.
Did you have – first of all, tell me about the going off sides. Who was that against? You remember it, so what happened? What was the deal? Did you just get itchy? Did you mistake the ball moving or something?
We called it on two.
Okay.
And sometimes when they're calling a play, they'll say, listen, it's on two. But they call like a pass play, and you start thinking about your route.
Yeah.
You know,
or you're thinking, I'm going to score on this play.
Something
I
like
got
that.
This guy beat.
You know, or you get to the line of scrimmage, and the defense does something different that you're not expecting, and you're thinking about, okay, what am I supposed to do now that they did that? You know, what is my check? And I got up to the line of scrimmage, and I can hear Fitz's voice because we were at home. It was so quiet. We were on offense. It's quiet for us at home on offense. And I can hear his voice, and Fitz would go, Sadat! You know, and he did that, and I jumped. And I'm like, oh, man.
He got you. He's trying to get somebody else.
Yeah, and he got me.
Now, tell me about – this is fascinating, by the way, and we're not going to give away from our topic. I think this could be a topic in itself. A lot of people are getting an education right now. Donald breaking down some terminology when you come out of the huddle and you hear a play. Did you have complement routes, or did you get told what route to run? And what I mean by that is in some offensive systems, they may only give one route to one wide receiver, and then as long as you know that, you know what your route is. Hey, if he's running a post, I'm running a corner. If he's running a go, I'm running an out. Or did you actually have a certain route told to you every play, and they would give like three routes if there were three receivers?
No. So when I was here, we ran a concept-based offense, right?
Okay.
So in a concept-based offense, you'll have – Stevie did his own thing. He was the X. He was by himself.
Who would have thought Stevie Johnson did his own thing out there?
Stevie
did
his own thing.
Yeah, but that's what made Stevie special.
Right. Fitz always had to give him a signal or something like that. For us on the two wide receiver side or three wide outside, it was a concept. So they call a concept, which would be, let's just say they called it Wyoming or something like that. Wyoming is a certain concept.
Okay.
And within that concept, everybody has their own route,
great,
depending on where you line up. So – you know, we can go into a certain formation, and I might be all the way outside. We might go into another formation, and I'm all the way inside in a three-receiver set. And I have to know what that inside position was supposed to do.
You had to know the slot.
Right.
You have to know
all three positions.
Wow.
Sometimes the tight end. Sometimes it's two wide receivers and a tight end.
Yeah.
You know, so the tight end has to know all three positions. That's a concept-based offense. It goes based on words. A digit-based offense is where everybody gets their route. They get one route, right?
So
it would be something like, you know, 538.
Yep.
So-and-so. 538 is the receiver on the left has a 5 route. The next guy has a 3. The next guy has an 8 route, you know? So
it would always go. It would always go outside in, I would guess.
Yeah, it goes
outside in.
And it usually goes from left to right.
If you hear 538, it's the guy on the outside is the 5.
Right.
Next guy is 3, then 8. That's usually the way you're going to work it,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
And then what if there are two guys on each side? There's twins on each side. It's left to right, outside, left to right?
Right.
Okay.
Right. And then, you know, that's why so many guys, like you always hear, Ocho Cinco, when he went to the Patriots, he had such a hard time learning their offense because he came from a digit-based offense in Cincinnati. And then when he got to New England, it was all concept-based, and he couldn't grasp that concept of you got to know the entire – what everybody's supposed to do because you might line up in a different place. When he was in Cincinnati, he was typically the X, and he knew, okay, this is the route I have.
Not only that, Donald, but let's say you come from a digit-based offense in Cincinnati – and you go to another digit-based offense in New England. It's not even that simple because the route tree could be numbered differently.
Right.
Correct?
Right.
So a 5 could be a go route in Cincy where a 5 is a curl in New England, for example. Right,
exactly. And the hardest part is the rules based on each route can be different everywhere. When I was here, we would run a hitch route, and it was like, 7 yards. And there was like you never broke off that route to something else. Based on what the defense was doing. When I went to New England, they had totally different rules. It was like, if the corner does this, you run a slant on a hitch. If the corner does this, then you convert it into a go.
Do you think that was because they had Tom Brady, though?
Yeah.
Because Tom Brady could obviously adjust better than most quarterbacks might be able to adjust, given a hot route and a sight route,
Yeah, because Tom Brady's been there so long, he knows the system better than the coaches. And a lot, obviously Gronk has been there. Edelman has been there. Amendola's been there a couple of years now. So all of those guys understand their rules, So when Tom Brady points at a certain linebacker, he doesn't even have to say anything. He points telling you this guy's about to blitz. You have to know your hot route. If you're a slot receiver, you have to know I'm hot on this, So in that offense, and even when I was here, you had to know when they're in a certain protection, the line is in a certain protection, so you couldn't just leave the huddle sometimes. You had to know, okay, the line is in this type of protection, which makes that linebacker, if he blitzes, that means I'm hot because that line doesn't have anybody
Correct.
To pick him up.
So the way I would teach it to make it simple for kids when I taught them was if the first defender to your inside blitzes, you just go to that spot.
Right.
That's the easiest way to do
that
it. Like if there's a guy, let's say you're lined up as the left wide receiver in an offensive formation, if the immediate defender to your right, who's a linebacker or a defensive back, blitzes, you go to his spot right away.
Spot.
Because what's going to happen, the quarterback's going to see him coming, he's going to throw it, and the quarterback is taught, throw it to where the guy was.
Exactly.
Because now there's a receiver there.
Right.
So that's how guys can get crossed up, but that's why you rep and rep. This goes back to what we talked about yesterday. Rep and rep and rep and rep and rep, and after a while, everybody knows where they're supposed
exactly.
to be on hot reads, right?
The good thing about the Bradys and the Peyton Mannings and Drew Breeses of the world, these guys will point out the linebacker and have it right almost every time. Before these guys come, it's like he looks at the defense and he points them out, and the guy blitzes. So he tells you you're hot, but not every quarterback can do that. You have to be able to see it. When I was here, sometimes it was like, listen, two guys have to blitz before you go hot.
Okay.
Because if one guy blitzes, we have a running back to pick him up.
Gotcha.
So you need the linebacker and the safety to come. If you see that, then you're hot.
But it's only on your half of the field, right?
Only on your half of the
field. Because you're not going to know if there's a guy on the other side blitzing,
you can't
right?
see that guy on the other side.
Okay, and then this whole Stevie thing about doing his own thing, how challenging was that to do? Because he was so good, but he was so unorthodox. But, man, that's got to be tough on a quarterback to know where he's going to be, right?
Yeah.
It's tough on you as a receiver if it's concept.
Yeah, see,
you don't
want to
be in the same spot as him.
Stevie and I didn't line up too much on the same side of the ball, so I didn't have to worry about what he was doing on the other side. And for the most part, Stevie was either running a hitch, he was running a fade or a slant. And for the most part, he was converting to a hitch, that was his, not to a hitch, but to a slant. That was what he loved to run, a slant route. So I didn't have to worry about it. Fitz just got used to it, and what got Fitz in trouble was he liked to stare Stevie down, and Stevie – even though Stevie knew what he wanted to do, it took him a while to coming off the line of scrimmage because he wanted to wiggle and do so many different things. And Fitz would stare him down, and so there would be.
But he almost
a whole
has
concept.
To, Donald. If he has,
he has to
figure out what he's going to do, right?
Right. Yeah. But then there, like, we come back and watch on film, and it would be like, what is he doing, man? We're wide open on the other side, and the play was supposed to come to this side. I understand that Stevie's the number one guy.
Right.
But as the quarterback, you got to be able to spread it out,
Right.
So we would come back and watch it in the film room sometimes and be like, come on, Fitz, what are you doing?
That's interesting. If anybody has any questions on this stuff, I'm sure we can Donald will be more than willing to break it down because he's doing a great job of it today. Play terminology, how things work in an offense, in a design, I think it's pretty fascinating myself. We can definitely have a conversation on that. 803-0550, 888-550-2550. But we also have a really, really – Good poll question for you today, and we'll throw it back up there to see where it's trending right now. You can go to my Twitter feed, at Sal Sports. You can also go to at John Murphy Show on Twitter. Vote in our poll, which, ooh, we have – it's still close. Look at this, but now Zay a little bit of change, up. A little bit of a change. Zay is still in the lead, but very, very slightly. Mm-hmm. Which player making their Bills debut in 2017 will have the biggest impact this season? Zay Jones – at 28%, slight lead over Reggie Ragland at 26, and then Tre'Davious White and Micah Hyde both at 23%.
We should talk about how important Reggie Ragland is or isn't coming back to this defense.
We can definitely do that. Let's do that when we come back. Sal Capaccio in for Murph this week. Donald Jones with me here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're going to be back after this timeout on WGR and MSG. Thanks for listening and watching.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We thank you for some great feedback during that break about the last segment. Donald, you were on top of things and killing it. That's why you're here, man. But really, we appreciate it. That was a great way to break down for the average casual fan who doesn't get to see the inside of how a huddle works, how a field really is organized for an NFL team, the things that get said. So a really good job on that. I'd like to stay on that if we can for a little while and ask you a couple of questions because I think a lot of fans are really engaged on this right now. And we'll get back to our Twitter poll, by the way. Again, the best, the biggest impact by a Bills player making their debut this year. Go vote at Sal Sports or at John Murphy Show. Donald Jones with me, Sal Capaccio. So, Donald, what about the differences in like how routes are actually turned? Because I've heard you could say a fly route or a go route, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could hear a down and out or an out. You could hear a curl. I mean, there's different things, a snake, a chair. There's all different routes, right?
Yeah.
So what about going through that? If you go from one system to another, how much can they really vary between one wide receivers coach? In your career, did you have coaches who called the exact same thing, the exact same route, something different?
Yeah, I mean, everybody has their own words for a different thing. That's
right.
Why when you hear guys say, you know, the terminology is different. It's the same stuff, but the terminology is different. And it's hard for guys that go to different teams because you'll go from the Bills to the Jets, you know, and they want you to run the same route, but they're calling it something different. And you have to get used to what they're calling it, you know. Or they're calling it the same route, but it has different rules and principles, you
okay.
know. Or, like, there's so many different variations.
So give me an idea of what you just said there. So let's say it's just a simple fly route.
Right.
What would be different rules or principles on a fly route? Would it be your leverage against the DB, like where you want to angle yourself, where your markers are, where you want to be? What would be a different principle just given a simple fly route from one system to another?
So on a fly route, it depends on what the defense is doing. Sometimes, let's just say if you're running a fly route and the cornerback blitzes off your face. Sometimes you get those corners that blitz.
Yep.
They blitzes off your face. Well, you might have to convert and just stand there, and the quarterback is supposed to throw it to you right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, the quarterback is supposed to throw it to right where the guy blitzes from.
Right.
In a different offense, they might say, listen, we don't convert on fly routes. Like, you just go, and now you got to beat the safety, you know. And if that cornerback blitzes, we have somebody else coming back out into the flats. There won't be anybody in the flats, you know.
Right.
So it just depends on the concept in the offense. But every offense is different. Now, the offense that the Bills are running this year – has West Coast principles.
Okay.
In a West Coast offense, you can't run routes like Stevie ran routes. You have to be in the exact
precise
in the exact spot.
Is that because the ball's coming
right
out so quickly?
Time. Yes. That is exactly why. You know, and what happens is when I was here, we would run like a bang eight, right? A bang eight is a post pattern.
Okay.
Now a bang eight in the offense when I was here, it was like, okay, we need you to run 10 yards and get into your post. A bang eight or a post pattern in a West Coast offense is you take 5 steps. Or on your third outside step, you go into your post.
It doesn't matter the yardage.
It doesn't matter. On your third outside step or 5 steps, you go into your post, right? So,
mm-hmm.
like, they have different ways to do it. And if a coach in a West Coast offense says, listen, we want you to run a post on your fourth outside step, you go into your post, you better do it that way or they will be very upset. Like I said, on your fourth outside set, not your third outside set.
That's how precise the coaches will
get.
That
is how precise they are. So, like, when I went to New England, Tom Brady was like, listen, if I say we run a 6-yard hitch, run it at 6 yards. Don't run it at 5. Don't run it at 7, you know, because I'm expecting you. I'm throwing it at 6 yards. Don't run it shorter or deeper. That is a problem. And if you do that and you mix up the quarterback, guess what? You'll be on the bench. The quarterback throws an interception and goes the other way, then you find yourself on the bench.
One of the things I found really cool was a few years ago. Now, before Donald did this radio and TV show, him and I did some TV work in the past when he was playing.
Right.
And one time you had your iPad and you were going through your game plan. I remember this specifically. I believe you were playing the Browns that week. And you were going through, and I said, oh, like, kind of show me some things you're going over here. And you were kind enough to show me. And one of the things you said, and I thought this was fascinating, was you said, yeah, normally we'll run our out patterns at this depth, but our coach told us that these DBs like to back up a little bit more than what we're used to, so now we're going to break those out patterns off a little sooner.
Right.
And that's how I was kind of blown away by how intricate every single game plan has to be to each individual route, right? Because it's not just the guy. Yeah, you're going to do things different maybe against a Revis, against someone else. But their philosophy, you had to know that in Cleveland that year, they were taught to give you just a little more separation space. So that meant on a route that you may have broken off at 12 one week, you're breaking off at 10 the next week.
Exactly.
Or vice versa.
We've even played against certain teams that run the same coverage a different way. Like I remember one year we played Cincinnati, and in a cover two, typically in a cover two, the cornerback like will force you all the way out of bounds if he can. If you're the outside receiver, they will ride you all the way out of bounds and then slump off to somebody who they have coming in the flat. But Cincinnati this year, that year we were playing them, their corners did not pay attention to you going out. Their safeties would get very wide and they would cover you, you know. So every defense does different things. And so this is why it's so important for film. Mm-hmm. And this is why it's so important to rep the same plays over and over and over, which is why last year – the Bills had so much trouble because, especially on the defensive side of the ball, because they were doing so many different things that once it came game time, it was like guys couldn't remember. When you make it simple, like the defense is going to be this year, when you make it simple for these guys, then it's like, okay, we know this week this is what the offense is doing. We're still going to run a cover two, but this week I just want you to move out a little bit.
Okay.
You know, where they make these little subtle changes that makes a world of a difference. But if you're trying to do so many different defenses, God, you can't make those subtle changes because I can't even remember all the defenses that you just put in, right? So the fact that this year everything's going to be a lot more simple on the defense and the offensive side of the ball helps guys out.
I guess that begs the question, Donald, then why do coaches make it so complicated? And my answer, if you ask me, would be ego, I guess. But
that's exactly what
I don't know. Is
I'm
that
telling you, it's ego. And to be honest, coaches outsmart themselves.
Yep.
Coaches try to do too many different things against certain teams, like a team like the Patriots. You come in and you're like, okay, we're going to do this, this, and this, and try to confuse a Tom Brady when you're only confusing yourself. Like, play what you play and let him try to figure out what you're doing. But don't try to get into doing a million different things because you're confusing your own guys. You only have a week to prepare for that game, you know? So I can't remember all of this stuff in a week. I might be able to remember it on paper, maybe. But then once I get into a game and it's 80, 90,000 people cheering and there's all types of stuff going on the field, I can't remember all of these plays, you know?
Did you play – you played a Thursday nighter, right? Did you play a Miami game at home?
Yeah,
were
we played a Miami game at home.
You were in that team, right? How much different is it when you have to prepare for a Thursday night game? Even against opponent you know,
right.
how much do you have to scale back on that?
It is really scaled back, dumbed down. I mean, you run the plays that you know. Like, and typically what happens is, I mean, if you play an early Thursday night game, it's tough because you haven't played that team yet.
Right.
If you play like let's just say you play the Jets the first game of the season, and then you play them again on a Thursday
which
night.
Which will be the case this year for the Bills.
Right.
They
play
opening week, and then in November in New York on a Thursday night.
Right. So they'll go back to that first week film and see how they played against them. You'll go maybe to the last two games and see what they've done. And it's really scaled back. Like, you run the plays that you are good at doing and the plays that you run every day in practice.
I mean, that's got to take a big chunk out of your options on your playbook.
It does.
Right?
It really does. For the most part now, coaches will start the game plan for a Thursday night game. They're game planning for 2 weeks because you're game planning
for that. There are coaches who are dedicated to that, right?
Right.
Like advanced coaches, pretty
These
much
coaches
advanced
here.
Scouting, things like that.
Coach McDermott will game plan, and he will make sure that his coaches – are ready for the Thursday night game before that Sunday game. You know, I mean, he's so meticulous in everything that he does. He will make sure these guys are on top of everything. So it's not an easy thing to do, man. Those Thursday night games are not easy. And when you have coaches that want to put in a billion plays, that's not easy as well, you know.
And before I move on to the defensive side, and we'll talk about Reggie Ragland and how this will all impact him with the communication issues last year and him making his debut this year, you can jump on the phone lines, by the way, 803-0550, 888-550-2550. Sal Capaccio, Donald Jones here, breaking down some terminology in the NFL, and really an interesting discussion here with Donald. I want to ask you about blocking and, you know, the terminology and, you know, how you have to kind of set up in different spots and stuff. How much different was all the different things you had to know blocking-wise versus routes when it came to terminology, lining up, different ways that you're taught everything, a stock block versus a crack and things like that?
So when I was here in Buffalo, if we were in the slot, you had to go in and usually block the safety because the safety is a run support. They're coming down and run support.
Even so if the safety was 7 yards away?
If the safety was way back and there was a linebacker that was more in danger or he was more of that run support, then you take him.
Okay.
But usually that safety comes down hard, especially if you're the slot receiver, you usually have a safety coming down to your side.
Right.
You know, so he's usually the strong safety. He's the run support. So you have to go in and seek him out and make sure you get him because – he's the last line of defense, you know, and you need to make sure you get him. The guys on the outside, the receivers on the outside, especially like the ex, Stevie didn't have to do anything. You just run guys off. And usually, to be honest with you, the DBs, when they see it's a run play, they'll turn and run with you. They will literally just turn and run with you.
Well, you know what Deion Sanders said about that? I made business decisions.
Right.
he didn't want to make tackles.
It's so bad.
Right.
Sometimes that you'll come up there and they'll even ask you like, hey, this is a run play.
That does not happen in the NFL.
I'm telling you.
That does not happen in the NFL.
You don't want to believe it. I'm telling you.
A DB said, Donald, tell me, is this a run play?
Is this a run play?
I don't want to stick my nose in.
Like, is this a run play?
Would you tell him?
No.
Because
then he'd be like, hey, it's a run play. But, you know, sometimes you try to trick him. Like, no, it's a pass play. And then you try to take off on him. But typically, if you just turn and run, they will run with you and just run down the field.
I always say to people, if an NFL play is executed exactly how it's drawn up, it will score a touchdown every time.
Right.
Because every defender is accounted for in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
Everybody is either blocked or run off.
Exactly.
There's no way. I mean, like you said, you have the safety.
Mm-hmm.
If you go through a team's playbook, they'll draw it up. Everybody is blocked in some way, shape, or form, or they're run off. And that's just the way it works. So if everybody gets their block, if everybody runs their guy off, you're actually supposed to run. You're supposed to score a touchdown on every play. But obviously it doesn't work that way because the defense actually has a job and they're going to try and defeat
you. Those guys get paid too.
That's right. You
get paid on offense to make blocks. But, I mean, it's not easy sometimes to go in as a slot receiver and seek out that safety, you know, because they come down fast sometimes. You get some safeties that don't come down as hard. You get other safeties that come down and they're like linebackers. You get a Cam Chancellor, it's like, dude, I don't even want to block this dude, first of all. I remember one time I went in and I didn't get the full protection and I didn't know what the tackle was doing. And I remember I went in to get the safety and the tackle was coming out and he went low to chop block him.
Right.
And I went high on him and that's a high low block. And it's a flat. Right. And so, you know, we got in trouble for it. I also remember a time.
But you didn't
where
do it on purpose. You're saying that you just.
I just forgot the protection and what that guy was supposed to be doing. I also remember one time I came in a motion, and I lined up as the wing. And as the wing, I feel like I had to block the defensive end. And this dude was huge, right, as a defensive end. And I remember I went low on him and the offensive lineman. All he did was stick his hand out. And they threw a flag on me, and I got fined like $10,000 for it. So you really have to understand everybody's job and what you're supposed to, especially in the run game, in the blocking, because if you don't, you'll forget your guy or you end up blocking the wrong guy. And then the running back is tackled. That's why every play doesn't go for
right. And, you know, touchdowns. Speaking of that, I'll go back to that Kansas City game. You remember when Stevie hit Eric Berry? He hit him low.
Oh, yeah.
And Eric obviously had the torn ACL. He was out for the year.
Everybody was upset with Stevie.
And he was upset. But, you know, I mean, it was a legal block, first of all. And like you said, I mean, you're a wide receiver. You're not really engaging and going and drilling guys.
Right.
That's only your only outlet sometimes is to make sure you go low like that. Unfortunately, he got him in the wrong spot, and it happens, and that's football. But what was, you know, just kind of that situation? You know, were you guys talking like anything like that? Eric Berry, you know that he was upset, but, you know, what are you supposed to say about that?
I mean, what can you say? You know, I mean, Eric Berry, listen, we're playing football. We're on the football field. So no matter if the fans get upset, no matter if the guy gets upset that you hit, he's going to be upset because you just ended a season.
Right.
You know, you tore his ACL. But he understands what's coming. DBs know wide receivers don't want to block. Wide receivers want to cut block. And so that's why DBs run so many of those drills where they're trying to work off the cut block, work off the cut block. Wide receivers typically don't want to block. Even a lineman, when they come out sometimes, they don't want to have to block these little corners and these little safeties
right.
because they're so shifty. So they'll just throw their body and cut block them. You know what I mean? That's DBs understand that. They get upset, but they get it. You know, it's the same. We talked about Aaron Williams yesterday.
Yep.
You know, it's the same thing. A safety, you know that you are run support. So you know there's a slot receiver to your side. His job is to seek you out. So your head is supposed to be on a swivel.
We talked about that from the safety side. Let me ask you about that from the wide receiver side. You're throwing a crack back. You're running. Your job is to crack, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And for people who don't know, it's what happened basically to Aaron Williams last year. You're a receiver. You're coming inside kind of like running a slant pattern. You're just basically hitting someone who's kind of not aware or you're going to get them. You're still taught to hit them in the front, though.
Yeah.
You can't hit them in the back. That's
right.
going to be a penalty. How are you taught to do that without getting a penalty, without necessarily ending someone's life and career and things like that? That's got to be a tough thing, but it's still your job.
It's so hard to do because as a wide receiver, you know, if I'm going up for a pass, this dude will take a shot on me if he had the chance.
Right.
You know, so it's like wide receivers don't get too many opportunities to take a wide open crackback on a guy. And you like, man, I'm about to light this dude up. Now, you're not supposed to lunge at him, but just like the DBs to tell you, man, things happen on the football field. I'm sorry that this happened. But things happen. Now, Jarvis Landry was totally wrong for the type of – for him, like, leaping off his feet
right.
and going into his head and neck area. But that hit was, you know, the fact that he came in there to crack back on him.
That's
that happens in football. That's a legal hit.
And Aaron bore some responsibility, as we talked about yesterday.
Right, exactly.
He didn't have his eyes to where they maybe should have been. Well, you know, this is what I always used to tell kids. Learn the guy's name. Learn
yeah.
the guy's name, because call his name, he might look at you.
Because
you want to make sure you hit him in the front. You want to make sure you hit him legally, right?
You know,
he's sitting there and you don't want to hit him in the back, learn his name. If his name's Joe, come down and say, hey, Joe, he looks
right.
at you, and then you crack
you know,
him, right?
Like, guys, I mean, you dream about that day when you get to, especially as a wide receiver, when you get to crack back on a guy that does not see you coming.
Right.
Like, that's because guys take shots at you all the time as a wide receiver, you know? Sometimes you might be going, you might run all the way down the field. The running play is coming to you. You turn back and you see like a safety or a linebacker scraping to try to make that play. And you're like, oh, I'm about to light him up. So you come all the way. We see it all
right.
the time. Those peel back blocks.
So how many
laid out.
How many blocks, though, typically, how many plays in your playbook actually do account for you cracking, let's say, from your position? It can't be a lot.
It depends on
it's pretty much just like sweeps things outside. No.
No, sometimes things inside,
okay.
they need you to go in there and get that guy.
Okay.
You know, now, a running back, like, was hard when you play with a running back like Shady.
Right.
You never know where he's going to end up.
Right.
You know, so it's hard. So you just got to make sure you get in there and just get in front of the guy. And another thing that's hard is, and this happened to me against Miami, Fred Jackson, I'm blocking the DB, and this DB, for some reason, he didn't want to just run off. Like, he was like, no, I'm going to help out in the run game. He was one of those corners.
You were stalk blocking.
I was stalk blocking him. So Fred, who comes out on like a sweep or something like that, just runs right up my ankles.
Okay.
And
yep.
This is when I had a high ankle sprain.
Yep.
You know, and those are the things that happen. So as wide receivers, you're like not trying to get caught up
yep.
in that scrum like that. You want to stay out the way. Sometimes you get ran down, though.
I just used the term that maybe some people don't know, a stalk block. So real quickly, just you can explain it, but a stalk block is pretty much the basic block for a wide receiver on a DB, right?
Yeah, it's just you're just in front of him, basically.
You just go up to him, you stand in front of him, keep your arms at leg, you're like stalking.
Right.
You're stalking him.
You're literally
stalking your shadow, and you just
basically.
Make sure he can't get it.
Just make sure if
right.
the run play comes to you, you better firm up.
Sometimes we use terms that people are like, he just said stalk block, what the heck is that?
Yeah,
so just
yeah.
wanted to
you're
make sure everybody
literally
knew.
Standing in front of the guy. And you can feel when it's coming your way. The DB will tense up on you and try to make the play. So,
all right. Well, good discussion here. Continues with Donald Jones. Let's get back to our Twitter poll as well. Which of the new Bills players this year on the field, new players, will have the biggest impact? Go to John Murphy Show or Sal Sports on Twitter, and you can take part in our poll. It's really, really close right now. In fact, a three-way tie for second. Zay Jones, a slight lead for first.
More of the John Murphy Show.
So I'm opening up the news here just to read some stories, and I come across man bitten by alligator at golf course in Florida. And this actually was literally at my home course. I used to live in Florida, like literally right there, the course I play the most. My friend lives on this course, and he happened to, what's crazy is, 2 days ago, Donald, he sent me pictures. He said, Sal, holy cow, check out this alligator on my hole. They had to catch it because it bit a guy. And now it's literally making national news. Do you care about alligators? You ever been near them? Or
no, the only time I've really been near alligators is when I trained down in Sarasota.
Yep.
And I used to just see gators on the side of the road. And it was the most amazing thing because I'm like, wait, they just lay on the side of the road like that?
Near
water. They're just laying out there like they're getting a tan or something.
Would you, if you were golfing and you saw a gator near an embankment, like, how would you run away, stay super far away? Like,
I'm staying away.
Okay.
You know? Here's the thing. I don't want to get near any water, you know?
So okay, I got
it's
you.
Just, I'm not even going to get near it. I don't even want to chance it. I remember hearing stories about people walking their dogs next to water down in Florida.
And then like, the gator comes up and
takes the dog. And it's like.
Yeah, it's pretty rare, but you're right. That has happened. But here's the thing. Like, if you're really, like, playing, like, I've played enough golf in my life where sometimes there's a gator right in the water, and, like, your ball is on the bank. You just go over there and you hit it, and you basically have somebody near you say, all right, just watch behind me. If that thing starts coming out of the water, have your club ready. And that's what you do. And like, if you don't bother the gator, he's not going to bother you necessarily. Now, granted, there have been instances, but you just, they're part of life.
Would you fight it like Adam Sandler and Happy Gilmore?
This guy here, you know what he did? He punched it in the nose.
Is that the soft spot? Is that
yes. In fact, true story, kids. If a gator is attacking you, if you take your two fingers and plug his nose or her nose within the nostrils, it'll probably let go of you.
Really?
And there is a girl who did that in Orlando, I believe, recently, within the last couple of years. She learned about that very thing I told you, and it happened to her, and she literally was grabbed by her leg, and she went and put it in its nostrils, and the gator let go of her.
Wow.
And she learned that in school to do that.
That is crazy because once they get you down in the water, it's,
you're done.
Yeah.
Because they're going to twist you around. They're going to drown you, things like that. The other thing is you can't run away from them, Donald. You think NFL DBs are fast? You have not faced a gator.
I mean, this is not kidding you.
So what you're supposed to do is you're taught if you run away from one, you either run zigzag or in circles and make the circles bigger because the gator will try to turn with you and its body is so fast. It can't. But if it goes straight line, it's getting you. It's getting those little legs of yours. It's going to pull you down, man. That's how fast they are.
That's why I stay away.
But I just saw this story. It's crazy. This happened right in my hometown.
I won't have that problem ever because you won't find me in any areas where there are going to be some gators.
Speaking of gators and playing golf, Steve Tasker has a lot of time in his hands since he retired from the NFL. But he won't anymore because he's going to come up next year.
He plays a lot of golf, so
that's
we should ask him about
it. That's right. WGR and MSG, Steve Tasker up next here on the John Murphy Show with Donald Jones. I'm Sal Capaccio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Checking in on what's going on in the sports world. The Sabres development camp has ended. They wrapped up today with their 3-on-3 French Connection tournament. I believe it was the white team. If you know who was on the white team, they wound up winning that thing in the 3-on-3 development camp tournament. Really fun time down at Harbor Center. Make sure you get down there next year if you didn't this year, but a chance to see some of those young players coming up through the system. Also, Aaron Judge, rookie for the New York Yankees, wins the home run derby in Miami last night. He was hitting moonshots. He wound up beating defending champ Giancarlo Stanton, actually, who they didn't go against each other, but he was out in the first round. And then Novak Djokovic has won in straight sets today at Wimbledon as that continues. The only match I saw at Wimbledon today, so looks like that's the only one on the docket so far, but we'll see. Maybe there's more, but it's the only one I saw online. Steve Tasker joining us here in studio. Good to see you, Steve. Hope you're having a good summer.
Guys, thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. What have you been doing this summer?
Playing a lot of golf, doing the grandpa thing.
It's
relaxing.
Good.
Yeah,
we were just talking about golf and playing. We had this story about this guy right where I literally played my home course in Florida where I used to live. My buddy texted me a picture a couple days ago and said, this gator was on our course. It made news around here. Well, guess what? Now it made national news. Guy got bit by a gator. Same course. My buddy lives there right at his house, basically. He said, I went out with a six-pack to watch them actually try and go trap the gator because it was like – big time. Have you ever been in a situation with a gator like I ain't going
near
that thing?
No, I've seen a gator I've been in Florida, seen gators on the course, but you're a 5-foot gator.
Yeah.
It's not like one of those 17-foot monsters,
Most like some of these.
By the same token, I'm not getting close to a gator that's 2 feet long.
Exactly.
It's crazy.
I know.
And I don't know whether it snuck up on him or he didn't see it or it came out of the
water. Apparently, the story is he was one of those golf ball divers. going into the pond, right?
You kind of ask for it, right?
Right, right.
Like, you may as well put a hook in your mouth.
And the
right?
gator was a mom, and he went too close to where the babies were, so the right. gator
That's
did
like
what a gator
does.
That's
like going into somebody else's house.
That's right.
To
That's
fight
what they
them.
Did.
Like,
no,
there
you
go. Doing?
That's what they did. We've had a really good discussion today, Steve, about terminology, and Donald was explaining a lot of when he played here with Fitz at quarterback and Stevie as wide receiver and him as wide receiver, and how some of the terminology, it was system-based, and there were certain words that they would use to do certain concepts. I always think of and I hear about Thurman and Jim talking about, we only had five plays. Belly right, belly left, and whatever right and whatever left.
Right.
Is that really true? Did you guys really only have like
yeah,
five plays?
Yeah, very limited play selection. And we had it Teddy Marchibrodo was the offensive coordinator when we started hitting our stride, and he was brilliant. In fact, you talk about a guy who like Dick LeBeau, who deserves right. consideration for a Hall of Fame nomination. You look at the guys that Teddy Marchibrodo worked with in their careers at quarterback, the best years of their careers from Jim, from Vinny Testaverde, Billy Kilmer, Burt Jones, you go on the back. The guy knew how to handle those guys, and he let them do what they did best. And Jim was a fast pace, wanted to get – he saw something in a defense, he wanted to go at it right now. Let's go faster, faster, faster. And they developed this offense. It started out as our two-minute offense. So, you know, if you want to go fast, you start pairing off right. the edges, you know. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon when we're hitting our stride, we're running a play every 16 seconds. That's not on the play clock. That's like – after the whistle blows, you start a stopwatch. 16 seconds later, we're snapping it again. Mm-hmm. So that precludes complexity in your play selection.
No doubt.
And we would go into a game. We had, like I was telling you in the break, you know, 5, 6, 8, maybe 10 plays that we would run every week against every team, against any defense they had, and we would be able to feel like we could be successful doing it. But then we'd have a small menu of wrinkles that we'd put in
right.
that were complementary to those plays. So if they stacked up and said, we're going to stop this play and this play, we would have a wrinkle in saying, okay, if they do that, we got them.
See, I feel like if you need to have in a million plays, I always go back to that game, college football game, famous college football game, Boise State versus Oklahoma,
right.
when they beat them on the trick plays.
Yes.
It's like, you know, you are not the same level as
Correct.
This team of
I
talent.
Agree.
You know, so it's
you
like
out scheme them out X and O.
Right. You know, the teams that are good, they know, look, this is what we do. Nobody can stop it. We might have a couple of wrinkles just in case you do something mm-hmm. to stop it, but this is what we do no matter what. Just
and
like
when you
Bills.
Have Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas, Steve Tasker, James Lofton, Kent Hall, Howard Ballard, and those guys,
yeah,
it's going to be tough.
Yeah,
well, Steve Tasker was on the, you know, covering kicks, but yeah, you got a handful of Hall of Fame caliber players on both sides of the football. And you know, and a quarterback that was tough and big-armed and accurate, and, you know, you got Andre in the slot. I mean, we were doing stuff that nobody else was doing, too. I mean, it wasn't just the plays. It was the pace of play that we played at. We were one of the only teams at that time that ran three wides all the time.
All the time.
And we had a great tight end, Keith McKellar, who could go deep down the middle of the field. So
right.
we were a handful. And I think one of the things that gets thrown out and that gets overlooked sometimes, James Lofton was on our team for 4 years. When we got him, we didn't have that guy on the outside that could go. When we got James, that was kind of a catalyst towards us turning the corner tactically, where they had to cover deep,
mm-hmm.
and we had a guy that could get behind him. And so they, you know, with Andre in the middle and running those little hook
right.
routes and crossing routes, they'd kind of the roof of the defense kind of lowered and lowered and lowered on the back end. And then we got James in there, and then of course Biebs, who could outrun
right.
everybody. All of a sudden, yeah, Andre became.
Well, I'm going to ask you the same question
force.
I asked Donald. So, lots of different systems have like either concept routes, complementary routes. Like I've taught systems where you could say, If number one receiver's running a fly, you're running it out. If he's running mm-hmm. a post, you run the corner. It makes it simple. Or I've been in systems and played or taught kids that said, we're going to go with the numbers. 6-5-4. You're
right.
running a 6, you're running a 5.
Right, right,
what
right.
was it? How could you do that with you
we
guys
began
because
with
of the
numbers.
Pace?
Well, we began with the numbers and with a number system. And we say formation, motion, formation, protection, motion,
okay.
numbers. And when you get the numbers, you know, the single receiver to decide whether it's a tight end split out or this X receiver was always the first number,
yep.
and then it went across
left right.
to the X, Y, and Z. And then so you could throw in any three numbers you wanted. But we started getting to this place where we'd get having success running these certain plays. And so and we wanted to go faster and faster. So we started throwing all those numbers out, and we just said, hey, Jim would call a formation, a protection, and – two-digit number.
Mm-hmm.
and the formation was a number. So it was like, you know, 8, bull, 91.
That's it.
And that was it.
That's it.
8 bull, 91,
that's
go.
Amazing.
And then he'd call a snap count, which was a word, like, and it was all on the offense.
Right.
So it was always about the offensive line because they were the ones who were going to jump off sides.
Right.
So we would, each guy on the offensive line had a snap count, so to speak.
That's amazing. So, and because you hear sometimes, I was just referencing to Donald in one of the breaks that there's an old clip of John Gruden coaching in Tampa, and he was getting so frustrated with one of his young quarterbacks because
Chris Sims.
It was so wordy, though. And I'm
it's
like,
Chris Sims.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, but.
Yeah, and if you transpose two of the words, everything's messed up. It's difficult. Now, if you want to be complex and you want to attack a defense where you think they're going to be and all that, yeah, that's. You got to get that way.
Right.
I mean, and that's a philosophy. And I think you do that. Coaches do that when they want to run the show. You know, when they
that's the question. Is it because of ego?
That.
Is it because of ego?
A little bit. And I think that's – and plus, two, it may be that they don't have the guys. Brian Billick did. They won a Super Bowl in Baltimore with a great defense. Mm-hmm. And Brian Billick was doing it with smoke and mirrors offensively. And Trent Dilfer came in, finally gave him some stability there and got a guy that could play. But Brian Billick was doing it with, you know, just
right.
guys. And they got it done because he could do that, and he had the intellect to, you know, to interchange parts and put guys in for specific plays and do a lot of subbing out. But it's a philosophy. Some teams like the Raiders, they're all concepts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't matter where those guys line up; they know the concept. They know the guy here is going to run that.
Yeah,
the guy, whatever. So they don't have a guy. And then if they want to get a matchup, the players dictate it. You know, Crabtree comes out of there, or Amari Cooper comes out and says, "I'm going to take that guy. Give me that spot," and they'll switch it up.
So it's
a concept based,
but,
and that helps a young quarterback.
No doubt about it. Bills Wall of Famer Steve Tasker joining us. Sal Capaccio in for Murph. Donald Jones here as well. I want to go back to what you said about coaching. I think we can all say, you know, obviously Rex really believed in what he did, and he did have an ego about what he was about doing, and it did work in this league for many, many years. So let's go to the other side of the ball. We have all heard about how much this year's defense will be so much more simpler, communication, concept-wise, just go and play. They're not worried about if they go 2-by-1, we do this. And if this guy goes in motion, this guy has a check. I was told a couple years ago by a defensive back with the Bills who said to me, Sal, like when I'm lined up, if there's a guy who moves on the other side of the formation, it affects me. I mean, I think all that is gone, Steve. How much will that allow this defense really to kind of play to their strengths?
Well,
this year?
It depending on what their strengths are, we don't know yet.
Right, right, right. Sure.
There's a lot of question marks around this team now. You got a new head coach, new offense, a new defense, new coordinators on both sides of the ball. You're going to have some guys in the lineup, particularly defensively. And you look at the Twitter poll you've got up, you know, Tre'Davious White,
yep.
Tre'Davious White, Reggie Ragland,
yep. Yeah, right.
And
Micah Hyde.
Those three guys are brand new, and they look to be significant contributors in a new defense that everybody it's new for everybody. But to your point, yeah. I mean, you got to give your guys a chance so they don't have to think, what?
Right.
Wait a minute, what does that mean for me?
If they paralysis can go out there and say, by analysis.
Right. There's no question, and even if you go around the league, Rex Ryan and the defense and Rob Ryan's defense they had a year ago is a stellar defense. It's complicated, though. It was very successful for Baltimore because they had a couple of guys in Ray Lewis and Ed Reed who mm-hmm. knew it. They were PhDs in that defense. So they covered a lot of tails back there by getting guys and telling them this, hey, this, this, and they were communicating all the time. It was a screaming match sometimes when they were trying to get guys lined up. But as a Rex Ryan and Rob Ryan defense, they've got an answer for everything you can possibly do offensively. It's hard to get there
right.
and keep it simple. And because offenses are so multiple these days.
It worked for him in New York because
of course.
He had Revis.
He had Darrell Revis.
Corners that can lock down. He had Cromartie on the other
right.
side.
Guys, a guy like Jimmy
down.
Leonard.
Well, they
guy
also
like
had
Jimmy
those
Leonard
guys down. They also had those guys down inside when he first got there, the big guy down inside, the defensive tackle who, you know, covered
right.
up a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I can't remember his name. Bennett? I can't remember his name. Somebody will tweet in and tell us. But,
right.
Yeah, they had some guys over there, and that's the crucial element to that defense. And it's not just about having great athletes and great dominant physical players. It's about having guys who are, you know, literally PhDs in the defense and can get guys.
Right.
You don't have 10 guys on the field instead of 11. You don't have guys lining up wrong. You don't have guys leaving a guy uncovered.
Right.
Here's I think this year, and hopefully it doesn't truly affect the outcome of the games. But on the offensive side and the defensive side of the ball, but especially on the defense because you have so many new pieces to that defense that are going to be starters on the defense.
Right.
It's going to take them a couple games. We're not talking preseason games because you don't play enough in the preseason to really get used to guys.
Right.
And practice during camp is not game speed, like knowing how to play off of this guy. So it's going to take them a couple games to really understand, you know, for the coaches to understand what these guys do best in a game situation and for those guys to be able to play off of one another and understand and trust, I know that safety has my back there. I know that, you know, if I blitz, this person has – like, it's going to take them a couple games to really understand it. Hopefully, they don't lose games because of that, though, you know.
And, yeah. And as good as you guys were in that run, that's true, too. I mean, it didn't just happen overnight. I mean,
it's an evolution.
People forget, yeah. And I know this was kind of before the K-gun necessarily, but people forget. I always tell people it wasn't a 4-year run; it was really a 6-year run. AFC title game in '88, divisional right. playoff in '89, and then the Super Bowl. And you guys were all there for that all together.
Right. They started in Marv got the job in '86, and then assembled his staff at the beginning of '87. Strike shortened year,
right? Mm-hmm.
And we had some things we had to figure out. '88, we kind of caught fire and went 12-4, went to the championship game. '89, we became when we were growing, and Jim became a star and a superstar, and Bruce was a superstar. We had Thurman in the fold, we had Biscuit in the fold. We had some dynamics. We had to get through the bickering Bills yep. phase, and then when that all settled out, and you know we became more like a family. We went on the run, but you know it takes and any coach will tell you, any player, it takes great players executing a really good scheme.
Right.
And you got to stay healthy, and yeah. you got so there are certain key elements that are similar in every great team.
You ever play basketball in like a pickup game, or I play basketball at LA Fitness, and there are times where you'll get a group of guys that come in, five dudes. They come in together, and it's like, oh, man.
Yep.
Like, you know these dudes have played together for some time. They start running plays and everything, and you're in a pickup game. You know, but that's what happens. These guys have played together for so long. That's why Seattle's defense is good. A lot of those guys have been on that defense now for years, you know, so they understand the defense inside and out. So when you get a new guy that comes in, then they can teach yeah. that guy the defense,
right.
you know.
He can be an apprentice.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's exactly right. It's an apprenticeship that makes you – evolve into it and learn and why the whys and hows and what fors, because
right.
by the time when in the run we're talking about in the Super Bowl run, you're getting young guys in there and you're saying four words and everybody's running a play mm-hmm. and they're going, what?
I can imagine, right?
What are you talking about? What's the formation? What are you doing?
Right.
So it takes them a while to catch up to speed, and believe me, in the NFL, and I know this way for NFL, when you got some guys out there like San Diego, the Chargers, New Orleans with Drew Brees, certainly the New England Patriots, any of these teams with these established quarterbacks, the Arizona Cardinals and Carson Palmer, they don't wait for you.
Right. No.
They're getting better. They're getting better from where they were a year ago when you were, when you were trying to make class. They're professionals working hard at getting better. You got to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what training camp is all about, and that's why a lot of young guys really struggle. That's why a lot back in the old days, head coaches just refused to play rookies.
What's the old saying? The NFL stands for not for long.
Keep back up. Then, no free agency. So these players, right. if the guy was on the team, his whole career was there. I mean,
yeah,
so
right,
he'd
right.
been there for 10 years, and he was, even if he was a backup. And so that, it was really hard to catch up mentally, and it still is today, even though the guys are coming out of college a lot more polished and exposed to a lot more.
This is why it's so important to have the same coach and GM in place.
Continuity.
That continuity means a lot to a team. Yeah, because
about it.
Even in a day of free agency, you can keep guys around if you have – you can keep those core guys around if you have the same coaching staff and the same GM. And no matter the new guys that you're bringing in, those core guys can teach those new guys, because ultimately you're as good as your weakest link on the team. Those guys
keeps giving too.
Right,
that's a culture. It's a culture.
Yeah.
Thing, We never hazed rookies during the time when Marv was here either. We acclimated them.
That's great.
We kind of reached out to them. Mm-hmm. If they were particularly when you get that final cut down there, and those guys are still in the locker room.
Yeah.
Let's face it. We had a tough roster to make.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got two Hall of Famers at the receiving spot and me covering kicks, who I wasn't going anywhere. So there was like two other spots or one other spot that was up for grabs every year. If you can make that spot, you're a pretty good player.
And you need that guy.
And we knew it. Same thing with linebacker, with Daryl Talley and Cornelius Bennett in the defensive line. I mean, good grief. So you can go around the roster. It was a really difficult roster to make. So we knew if there were some young guys in there, and there was always 10 or 12 guys, they were they had done something that was really difficult to do. This organization back in the day cut a lot of players who went to other teams and great careers because it was just too hard a roster to make. So we never really had a problem in embracing the young guys. And, you know, there was none of this hazing or you get go, you know, that. There was a little of that, but it was in fun. It was never anything.
Make them sing a song or something, whatever. Yeah.
Not even.
Really?
They were part of the family, and we wanted to get them up to speed in every way, shape, not just X's and O's, but also, you know, socially.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I can imagine that. we're going to talk with Steve Tasker, by the way, who's here with us, Bills Wall of Famer, also an analyst for CBS television. You can hear him on the radio and see him on television once football season rolls around doing some games. We're going to talk about the AFC East and walk through that. But first, we have a phone call from Dan, who's down in Florida. Hi, Dan. You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hey, guys. Hey, look, Steve, it's an honor to talk to you. I met you about 20 years ago.
Oh, thanks.
So I live in Florida for the last 20 years. And by the way, Donald, the easiest way to not get bit by a gator is stay 20 feet away from any piece of fresh water in Florida.
Well, thank you. Right. Thank you for that advice.
That's what he said. It's true.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not kidding. You know, living down here, I've never ever literally touched fresh water down here. I'd rather swim with the sharks than swim down, because it's not just gators; it's water moccasins. They're aggressive, and they'll go after you.
I'm rethinking my timeshare in Fort Lauderdale. Let me tell you.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah. So all I'm telling you, man, don't get in the fresh water, dude.
All right. Well, thank you for that.
What else is on your mind, Dan?
All right. Anyway, and Steve, by the way, I recommended you last night because on Late Hits they talked about who's the best special teams players ever. And I said, how can you not have Tasker as the best special teams player ever? And it was between you and what's his name? Primetime.
Yeah, you know, Deion Sanders? Deion Sanders was – he was a phenomenal return guy. Take it from – I chased him a little bit. he's good. Deion Sanders and I – he was probably as great an athlete as I ever played against at any level. He was head and shoulders above other guys. There was a handful of guys during my 13 years that I played, both at the end of their careers and at the end of my career that overlapped. There's maybe four or five guys that were unbelievably separated in their abilities than everybody else. And even guys, it's hard. NFL locker rooms are hard things to impress. Mm-hmm. But when you get NFL loggers all across the league that talk about these guys in whisper, they're like, hey, did you see that guy on film?
Right. Is that Deion?
Yeah, Deion was one of those guys. Bo Jackson was one. Eric Dickerson was one. Mm. You kind of dry up after that.
That's a short list, man.
It's a short list.
It's amazing.
And then I'll get off the air. It's okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Just, you know, Donald, I loved your comments regarding the receivers and how you actually broke things down. And my thought is that I would think that Dennison would be doing that with Zay Jones to keep it simple, stupid, so that he can just use his talent. And the only thing that worries me is that you're talking about a West Coast offense, and we already have Tyrod with a reputation of holding on to the ball too long and not anticipating well. So, you know, what do you guys think? Do you think he's going to be able to move from that? And that's about it. And I'll get off the air.
Thanks, Dan.
Listen from the radio, and God bless you guys. And I hope you had a nice fourth last week.
Thanks, Dan.
Appreciate it.
You know, I think in terms of I don't know if they're going to run a total West Coast offense. I think it's going to have West Coast principles somewhat in the passing game. But I think they're going to use a lot more play action than anything because the run game is so strong. So it's like
– and that's what Dennison does. That's the Kerry Kubiak tree, the play action.
Right.
The rollouts.
You know, so that kind of works towards his – what he likes to do. And Tyrod Taylor, play action deep down the field, deep overs, things like that. We're not talking about, you know, West Coast just shotgun, get the ball out, and, you know, one step, throw it. We're not talking about that type of West Coast. I think it's going to be a little bit different. It does have some West Coast principles.
Wouldn't this maybe help Tyrod to be in a situation in a offense where they're going to say, okay, look, like, we're going to give you the reads where as soon as you get rid of that ball and you get out, here's your read and you can get to that guy quickly.
Yeah, I think that'll play to what Tyrod does well. If you come out and say, if this is here, throw it. If this is not here and this guy's here, throw it there, and that's it.
Right.
And the ball's going to come out. I think it may play to his strengths, and you're right. You mix that in with the running game that they've got. I think there's no question, too, that they're going to evaluate what Tyrod does and how they want him to do it, and they're going to play to his strength. So if he can handle this and they can drill it and get it down, No, they're off to the races.
You think more flood and half the field read type of thing?
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it'll depend. They got to evolve, and it's just like he was talking about Zay Jones. I mean, they're certainly going to start out by giving him like, you know, two routes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Terrell Owens for 2 years of his career ran a slant, a fade, and a post. You know, that was his
that was his
route tree. You know, that was it. So they're going to keep it as simple as he can. But by the same token, let's face it. They're going to be in training camp for a month, and they're going to do this all day, every day. So he'll evolve pretty quickly as the training camp goes. He'll catch this, and they'll get him some reps, and then he'll add something to it, and they'll get him some reps. Then they'll go back to the beginning and do those two things and get him some more reps, and then they'll add a third thing and then get him some reps.
Right.
So so pretty soon after, you know, 3 weeks of that, he's going to have a pretty good handle on what he needs to do.
Plus,
and he'll be able to start
He has
competing.
Position flexibility.
Right.
He can play slot, he can play outside, and they're going to do that.
Well, that's great, but that makes it all more complicated.
Right,
for
so my question is how do you install that with him? You basically let him concentrate on one position first, like slot or outside, and then later start to put more of that on his plate?
I think there's different philosophies, but I think what you do is you teach him the plays, and you teach him what everybody's doing at the receiving side of it. You teach him why, and then you let him watch it on film, and you keep teaching him that, but you only let him play one.
Mm-hmm. Right,
because that way, you know, because sooner or later, you're right. I mean, if he can do it, they're gonna. All right, now you're gonna play Z today instead of X that you've been playing for the last 10 days, and now here you go. And then, and believe me, when they do that, you can't even find where to line up because you've been going the opposite way. They'll call pro right or zing right or far right, and da da da. And every time you go right, you're supposed to go left. To this very day, 20 years after I retired, my wife goes, turn right, and I'm hooking it left because I still go the opposite way, like when the position is called. It's hard.
Plus,
you're trying to compete against athletes who are, you know, who are gifted, and you're trying to impress, but, you know, you got all this stress on you, and then they're trying to give you too much to think about it. I mean, you know. So that's why it takes a while to acclimate.
It does. I remember, you know, when I first came in, they were like, you're going to play the Z. And that was all I was learning was the Z. And then they were like, okay, you're going to go into and it was like, you're going to go into H now. And I'm like, all right. So now I'm playing in the slot. And then they started putting in audibles. And I was like, you got to zing to your spot, or you got to do whatever to your spot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait. So I got to line up on the opposite side in motion to my spot, or sometimes I line up in my spot in motion away to the opposite side. Like, there's so many different things. Then it takes guys a little second to
just
give
me the five plays we used to run. You know, no motion.
Just
no.
Like I was telling him the other day, the Denzel Washington, the coach in remember the Titans. It's like Novocaine. Don't do much, but give it time; it'll work.
Yeah,
right. And that's all you got. That's all you got to hope for there. All right, we're going to take a timeout. When we come back, we're going to go around the AFC East with Steve. I'm super interested, Steve, in your take on the Jets and what it seems like they're doing this year, and if you think it's the smart move for this organization. They've stripped it down, and some may even say they're tanking. I believe they are, but we'll see. Plus, are the Patriots really as good as it appears on paper, and how about the Dolphins? Can they take the next step? Steve Tasker in on the John Murphy Show with me, Sal Capaccio, and Donald Jones.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
All right, welcome back to the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. Sal Capaccio in for Murph with Donald Jones and Bills Wall of Famer Steve Tasker. You can catch him during football season. Television, radio. Do you get excited for that? Like, you know, you're going to be doing lots of games, I know, but you can also be away from the fam, your grandfather and all that. But
I like the work. I love it. And the company is great. The CBS has been fantastic to work for. Everybody I've worked with at CBS has been stellar. So it's been a great experience. It's been a real
When do you get your schedule?
We really don't get our schedule until just a couple of weeks before each game.
Okay.
So we'll get there was one year, a couple of years ago, where they gave us the first half of the season.
Yeah.
Mostly, though, like last year, they went back to it, and they gave us, like, the first 3 weeks. When we did the first week, then you get the week four. Three games out.
But you do Monday night?
I do some Monday night football sideline radio.
Right, so you know exactly. So at least you know that schedule. You might not know which games you're on necessarily, but at least you know if that's already set up.
That's right. So we can make travel arrangements and all
Correct,
that.
Right.
But it gets – and it, that lead time – gets even shorter and shorter and shorter the deeper into the season you get. So there have been times when we know who we're doing this week, and then like on Tuesday
TBD
Tuesday of the week we know we're going to find out the week after that.
Wow.
What about if a game
because of the flex scheduling.
I was just about to say, if a game gets flexed, it's like, man.
That changes everything.
Sunday night game in Oakland?
Yeah. It's not like us. If a game got flexed for the Bills, for me, all it's really changing is the date and time. You could change an entire city where you're going.
Yeah, we don't even know the city. We don't even change it. We don't even find out.
That's right.
We have, you know, there's a pecking order, and you kind of get a feel for where your game might be. But it's always again, you know, it's like three games you're picking from, and you know, it's in Tennessee, it's in Jacksonville, or it's in we might get a New Orleans game when they host an AFC team.
Do you know? Will you always be with Andrew? Will you be with him again this year?
No, actually, I'm not going to be with Andrew. I'm going to be with Tom McCarthy.
Oh, okay.
And Steve Berline and I.
Okay, all right.
And we're going to do our crew is going to do. I'm going to be. We did it with the Bills-Jet game last year, Week 17, where I stood on the sideline and was a live mic.
Yep.
So I did the analyst work from the field.
That's right.
We're going to do that all year this year.
That's pretty cool.
For the games we get.
That's pretty cool.
And I'm going to also work for Westwood One as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
You think you can see more from the sideline than up in the...
Well, here's the thing. And what we found, and we had a lot of long conversations about what it should look like and what it should feel like. And what enhances... We were trying to enhance the game a little bit and give it a little... something different for people to look at. And one of the things we found is when I'm talking on the sidelines, there needs to be a camera there dedicated to see what I'm seeing and looking at. Because it gives you, because what it does is when you're watching the game, it's like, oh my gosh, we're right there. You know, mm-hmm. It's not like you're watching from a booth from the high angle and you're talking from the sky. I'm standing as close as to you as I am to, you know, Todd Bowles.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or in this case, it was Rex Ryan and all those guys. Yep. I'm standing at the dot. At the diamond there at the end of the bench, and I'm talking, and I can hear what the players are saying. I can hear some stuff, and you can see when the teams break the huddles. You know who's making eye contact with who.
That's
great. So when they get, we can translate that onto the broadcast. And I can say, well, here's what I'm saying. Like last year, I was saying, listen, I know it, the way they're playing. Sammy is A, B, and C. When people see that, at least the feedback we got, the people who are watching home are like, wow, we're even closer.
Really opens up the game for them.
It adds a little element of the way people feel about the game when they're watching it that I think the network wants to explore, and they're going to give us a chance to do it.
The Bills open with the Jets, their first game, opening game here in Buffalo, right outside from where we're sitting at New Era Field. This Jets team, let's be honest, I mean, they've made a conscious effort to strip it down, to restart, and I would say they're actually tanking. They're all in on trying to get one of these top prospect quarterbacks in 2018, Steve. First of all, do you agree that they're trying to do that, and do you think it's the right move for this organization at this time?
Well, I mean, look at the guys they got rid of, Marshall.
Mangold. Decker.
Harris.
Yeah, they got some. They let some good players go.
Yeah, they did.
Now, Mangold, you can say, well, he was 30, but 31 or 30, whatever. But, yeah, that's some guys. And they still don't. They've got Christian Hackenberg, who they didn't let him on the field last year. Now, Todd Bowles could look like a genius if Josh McCown comes out, struggles a little bit or whatever, and then say, okay, now, Christian, we're going to put you in. And he comes in and looks great. Maybe this is a time where one of the teams, like the Jets, were patient with a young kid, let him grow, let him learn, and then got him in his second year after the guy struggled or when the season wasn't going to go anywhere. And all of a sudden the kid catches fire and shows something that they're going to stick with him.
Mm-hmm.
I think Todd Bowles deserves a lot of credit if that's the case. Now, he'll always take some criticism in New York because, hey, you should have played him before. But if you play him before and he doesn't play well, you're drafting somebody this last year.
Right.
So if he does play well, I think Todd Bowles deserves some credit for that, for waiting on the kid. If he doesn't, Todd Bowles may be out with with the rest of them. Mm-hmm. You know, he may not survive after the season's over.
But I don't know if it matters who plays quarterback for them, because that quarterback depth chart just does not look very impressive on the surface, right? I mean, you got McCown, Hackenberg, and Petty. It doesn't matter. Maybe pick one out of a hat, Steve. I don't think they're going to be very good under center.
No, they're not. Well, particularly when Nick Mangold's not there.
Right.
And you've got a team where your three best weapons or your two best weapons on the outside, Marshall and Decker, are gone. Mm-hmm. You got a lot of question marks. Let's face it. Even the Jet fans are saying they're kind of buckling in for a rough season. They know what's in the cards for that team. And I think the question is, did they bring Todd Bowles in to have this happen, and then so they could cut him, could get rid of him, he's not going to see the end of the of the project, which I think is unfortunate.
I do too. And look, I mean, I've made it known on this radio station and programs I'm on. I think that we've really gone a little too far in our culture of tanking in all of sports, whether it's basketball or football or baseball. We're seeing basketball or hockey, I should say. I think too many teams are kind of embracing that way of thinking, but I don't really blame the teams. I blame the leagues for setting up systems that almost encourage it, which is like, hey, man, if you're that bad, you're going to get this blue chip prospect. And now, though, I think what's happening, though, is it's kind of been pervasive and it's kind of bleeding into the fans' line of thinking. What bothers me, Steve, is when I hear fans who basically say, well, we're not going to be the best team, so we might as well just be the worst. What's wrong with trying to be the best? If you're going to be, if you can win 9 or 10 games, damn, try and win 9 or 10 games, because it's about trying to win and overcoming and competing to me.
Well, and you can sneak into the playoffs.
Right.
That's right. Well, the thing is, for fans, it's more cut and dry than it actually is. If you think back now, think about even the Buffalo Bills last year. You know, there were a lot of times through the bulk of last season where the Bills didn't look very far away.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But you're telling me a team, and the Jet, I know the Jet players felt the same way. They felt like there was just, you know, there was just a cog missing, or there was a couple of mistakes. It was them, not, you know, they had a chance to win. And they felt like they could and could see what it was going to take. Fans are more like, hey, they got no shot. Let's tank it. And, you know, they don't realize that, you know, I was on a team that was 9-7, made the wild cards in 1989, the year we went to the divisional round of the playoffs, and then, or the wild card round,
right,
and then went to four straight with the same guys.
Right.
You know, I mean, it ain't that far away.
Mm-hmm.
You're just not that far away. And I, you know, to tank, even if you tank, this isn't hockey, this isn't the NBA. You know, you draft Sidney Crosby, Jack Eichel, Connor McDavid. You go down the list, you know, Mario Lemieux, Wayne Gretzky. You draft those guys. You draft one of a guy like that in the NFL. What do you got?
Another guy.
Andrew Luck? They ain't in the playoffs.
Right.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you have so many teams in the NFL that really, talent-wise, are around the same level. Mm-hmm. You have 500 teams. They end up sneaking in another two games or three.
You're losing games by less than a touchdown.
Right. You know, so you end up with either 8 or 9 wins, or you end up with 10 or 11 wins because a ball bounced your way, and you end up in the playoffs, you know, and it just so
happens. And then everything
changes.
The whole perception of your team and your organization changes just because you got a bounce at the right time.
Exactly.
Maybe 3 bounces at the right time over the course of 4 months.
You know,
it's less than a handful of plays.
That's right.
Less than a handful of plays.
And then long term, even if you do it, here's the thing about football. Let's look at Cleveland. Cleveland started that process a couple of years ago. They're still a couple of years away. And by the time they may even get close to being competitive, a lot of those guys have turned over.
And they've been through 3 head
coaches.
That's right. And, you know, that boils down to something that none of us are ever going to have anything to do with. That's ownership.
That's right.
You know, how patient are the owners going to be? And I've told this story a million times, it seems like, but I spoke to the late, great Dan Rooney 10 years ago, it was after the Pittsburgh Steelers won their second Super Bowl with Mike Tomlin. And I said, Mr. Rooney, how do you pick a head coach? You had Chuck Knoll for 24 years. You had Bill Cowher for 15 years. Now you got Mike Tomlin. You've had 3 coaches in 15
years.
It's
amazing.
Yeah. I go, how do you pick them? I mean, what makes you pick these guys that are winning Super Bowls every coach you hire?
Mm-hmm.
And he was priceless. You know, he was hunched over at this point in his life. And he kind of shrugs his shoulders, looks at me, and goes, you hire the smartest guy you can find, and you stick with him until he figures it out.
Wow.
That was it.
Yeah.
That was his big piece of advice. And, you know, you get these organizations, you know, you can go down the list, Cleveland, and even to a certain extent here, where you stick with a guy and you don't have time to stick with him until he figures it out. Because, you know, you're going to not sell tickets. You get impatient. You see him make a couple of mistakes that are egregious. And it's like, well, you ain't going to ever figure it out.
Right. That's right.
You know, so it is what it is. When you're talking about these organizations that can't find the right recipe, you know, it does start. You do hang it on ownership. But it's not just true here in Buffalo. It's true in Cleveland. It's true in San Diego.
Yeah.
It's true in Arizona.
It was true in Oakland for many, many years.
It's true in Oakland.
And then they get Derek Carr. Oh, my, how that happens.
And then they catch lightning in a bottle, and then all of a sudden the owners who have maybe struggled doing it are going to say, okay, all right. And they can take their hands off because they know, or you know what, these guys are proving it to me. So then the organization gets to a point where they can let it go, and it becomes self-sustaining.
You also, I mean, the Bills in this 17-year run or drought, you know, how long have the Patriots been on top of this thing? Now, you look at a team like Houston.
They're in a different situation than a lot of these teams.
Right.
They're not chasing.
Absolutely.
They're not chasing the best of the best every single year with Brady and Belichick.
Right. You're not chasing. Like,
you're
look
always
down
playing.
In the
it
AFC
seems
South.
Like you're always playing for the wild card, right?
Right.
Not the division.
Right. Exactly.
That's exactly. It, let's face it. I mean, and I've said this before. It's kind of half joking. Only half joking.
Okay.
you know, somebody else is going to win this division when Tom Brady's in a rocking chair and Bill Belichick's got a stake through his heart.
Right.
You know. I mean, it's going to. They're good. They're both good. Bill is the most successful head coach of any era, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's that, you know, and I know that, you know, people don't like I'm a former Bills guy, and, you know, guy.
Right.
Right.
The guy's the best maybe ever. Mm-hmm. And he's in the short list, the very short list. Mm-hmm. And doing it in the era of free agency with moving parts, with certainly he's got a franchise quarterback, no doubt about it, but they went 3-1 with some guy named Garofalo.
Right.
And he went 11 and 5
Castle.
Matt Castle, who some of his teammates have said he couldn't play dead in a Western movie. And they were 11-5 with him. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy does things differently. They got a program and they got an ownership group that is on board with them. They do things a little bit differently than everybody else.
But, Steve, I want to ask you this about this year's team with New England, because it does seem like they're acting a little bit out of character this year. They're actually going out and signing some names. They're spending more money. And some people have a theory that maybe they know that this is it. This is the last kind of hurrah with Brady, because they got to make a decision, Garoppolo, Brady. And I know it sounds weird to say that, but you know the way Belichick operates. Do you see that, or do you see that, no, it's just the Patriots and guys are going there to play and they're going to be on top? But it seems like they are acting a little out of character this offseason.
Well, they did seem more active.
Right.
No question about it. And I get it, but certainly they think they've got a quarterback that they can win with, and they're giving him some weapons to do that. But by the same token, you know, I would say, yeah, they've got this plan in place, but they've also got a plan after this plan is over.
Right.
Right.
They say, we're going to do this for this, but then we're going to make some moves after, if, you know, we got whatever window they're talking about with Tom, or the whatever scenario we're talking about, whether they're giving Tom 2 years or 3 years, or they've got a window of time, they're going to act like this out of character until they reach the end of this window.
Yeah.
They're going to evolve out of this, and they could just as easily go backward next year and say, hey, listen, here's moves we're going to make. They plan very far out in advance. They've also got a philosophy that's proven to be good. And if they're deviating from that process, it's because if they're paying more money for free agents, I'll tell you what, they're pulling it in from someplace else. They're shorting contracts on other spots. They're staying within the parameters of their organization. They just don't deviate from it.
The other team in the AFC East, the Miami Dolphins. Very, very nice season last year for them to get to the playoffs. Can they sustain it this year? Steve Tasker with us. He covers the AFC for CBS on radio and television. We'll be back when we come back on the other side. We'll talk about the Dolphins with Steve and Donald Jones here on the John Murphy Show.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Great having the Wall of Famer, Steve Tasker, hanging out with us here at the John Murphy Show, right here at the Pagula Sports and Entertainment John Murphy Show Studios. Thanks a lot for joining us. I'm Sal Capaccio. He's Donald Jones. We've been talking about the AFC East, Steve, and the Dolphins are really an interesting team because I think that their fans really expect them to take the next step. It's not that easy, though. I mean, they had a nice year last year. They got to the playoffs. But I like what Adam Gase has done. He seems like a smart young coach, but you know, for them to take that next step, a lot of it have to come down to Ryan Tannehill. I think that's the question everybody seems to ask. Is Ryan Tannehill the guy? Well, I think if you're asking that 6 years into his career, I don't know if he's the guy. I think that's the way I look at it.
Well, yeah, maybe. But I don't think they've ever really had a dominant defense on the other side of the ball. I don't know if that he's ever had an outstanding offensive weapons around him, although, you know, last year it started to emerge, and certainly quarterback has something to do with that. They got Julius Thomas this year. I think that's really going to help them, particularly stay on the field. I mean, Tannehill has said himself that they needed to convert more third downs. They get more offensive plays. They just couldn't stay on the field enough, consistently enough last year, and I think it hamstrung them a little bit. They had some guys really break out. Jay Ajayi had a really nice 1,300-yard season. Jarvis Landry is a really good playmaking guy, although he's not very big. He plays physical, and he seems to be durable enough to stay on the field. Mike Pouncey will be back in the lineup. If he can stay healthy, that'll help them. He was out a lot of bulk of last year. Tannehill missed the last four games with a knee, but he was 8-5 as their starter.
Laramie Tunsil was a nice rookie for them.
Tannehill they go 10-6, you know, or 11-5 with Tannehill. So, they got the wide receiver Leonte Carew.
Yep.
So they got another wide receiver in the stable. So I'll tell you this too. I did one or two of their games last year. I like Adam Gase. Very young demeanor. Young, energetic guy. I mean, a lot like a college kid, man. Really energetic, and laughs all the time, having fun all the time. Really energetic, running around and talking to guys. And I was in there doing a game, and I was talking to Dan Marino, and we were standing there watching practice. And Gase comes in and kind of playfully kind of puts Marino in a headlock, and they start laughing and joking around because it's kind of energy he's got, right? So I'm like, that. Players like playing for a guy like that, and I think they responded to what Adam Gase was selling last year. They got to the playoffs. I don't think it's the kind of locker room. Maybe it will be. We'll see. They're not going to get complacent with it. They're going to have expectations they place upon themselves. I think that spells a lot of positive things there in Miami. We'll see if Julius Thomas can help him stay on the field and offensively in third down. If he can do that, they may stay right where they're at and stick in the playoffs.
They definitely have weapons on offense around Tannehill. Julius Thomas is huge for him at the tight end spot. I think that defensive line, though, is a good defensive line with Cameron Wake and Ndamukong Suh and those. I mean,
yeah, that's a real good defensive line.
Exactly. They can get to the quarterback, And last year we thought, okay, they have a bunch of pass rushers, but they could stop the run as well, And Kiko Alonso and those boys do a good job as well. So I think, that's a team that you really have to watch for. We play them late in the season.
Twice late in
the season, and it's not going to be easy games going down there or coming
back.
Listen,
Ndamukong Suh's still dominant.
Yeah.
He's dominating as a defensive tackle. I mean, you can't move the guy. And if he wants to bring it, you're going to have to it's going to soak up two guys all the time. And so they have got some – that's a force to be reckoned with up front. So if they can – they got those guys in place last year. Now if they can bolster what's around them in the back end and also the linebacking core – all of a sudden, their offense doesn't have to be so productive, and they will get on the field more because not because they're converting third down, because the other team's not.
Right.
So, it's going to be nice.
The thing I like about Gase, I don't know if people realize this. Jay Ajayi did not even go to the Seattle game to open the season last year because he did not like what was going on with his situation in preseason, and he didn't put forth the effort that Gase wanted him to give. And guess what? He left him out. He said, I'm not taking you to Seattle. Well, guess what? They lost that game, and later Jay Ajayi got the message, and we saw the season he put together. I think that proves what you were just saying. That's the kind of guy you want. This kind of guy, Jay Ajayi wanted to play for him in the end, but it was tough love, and he showed that.
Yeah, I think players of every ilk crave a guy that not only is a great coach, great football mind, but also is a mentor.
Right.
And players want to be coached for the most part. They all want to be coached. Some of them, respond better to certain types of coaching styles. No doubt. That kind of. Some guys like to be coached hard, and then other guys crumble when you do that. Some guys like to be stroked. They like to be told, "Hey, you're doing great. Do this better." And then when they do something right, they like to, to be praised for it, and that gives more. Then they want to give more. So that's how those guys respond. But they all want to be coached in some way, shape, or form because they're all trying to get better. And Jay Ajayi is no different. And when you get a guy, and I think it's true across the league, and it's certainly true here in Buffalo, they want a guy they can respect who says what he means. And when he says no, that's what it means. And when he says yes, it's what it means too, and he's willing to say it. And also a guy who listens. I think Adam Gase is a young guy who listens to the pulse of those guys, but he's not going to let them run the team.
That's right.
And I think last year is a great indication of the fact that Adam Gase has his hand on the pulse of those guys and push the right button, certainly with Jay Ajayi. 1,300 yards in 15 games.
400-plus against the Bills, oh, by the way. Oh, my gosh. I mean, he really gashed that defense last year. So the Bills are going to have to account for him this year. Hey, family's good? Grandfather, being a grandfather's great, right?
Yeah, we had a big weekend with the granddaughter. Camp at my house.
Good for you. Steve Tasker, thanks for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your summer.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Steve Tasker with me, Sal Capaccio, and Donald Jones in for John Murphy this week. We're going to have Brian Woods. He is the CEO of the new Spring Football League. Oh, by the way, Fred Jackson and Boobie Dixon playing in that thing. We're going to talk about that when we come back at the John Murphy Show.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
Great having the Wall of Famer Steve Tasker join us last hour. Really fun stuff with him. Great breakdown of the AFC East. Check that out. John Murphy Show over at BuffaloBills.com when you get a chance if you missed any of that. In the meantime, some sports headlines for you. The Sabres wrapped up their development camp. Their 3-on-3 French Connection tournament took place earlier today. And on top of that, how about Jason Botterill, general manager, saying it will not be a contract extension at this time for Sam Reinhart. Looks like maybe they're going to make Sam Reinhart play out his year, at least get close to that, to see where he is before really going down that road for a contract extension. So that's very interesting news coming out of the Sabres today, and that is from WGR Sports Radio 550's Paul Hamilton, by the way. Check that out at WGR550.com. Aaron Judge wins the home run derby last night. The New York Yankees slugger got through each of his rounds on top and wound up going away the champion as a rookie in Major League Baseball, winning the home run derby. And Novak Djokovic wins in straight sets at Wimbledon today. I'd say earlier today, tonight, where over in London, it's like how many hours ahead? 5 hours ahead? 6 hours ahead? Five hours ahead. So there you go. He's Donald Jones. I'm Sal Capaccio. We have on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with us, joining us right now is Brian Woods, Subway Eat Fresh. Brian is the CEO of the Spring League. That is a new spring showcase football that's going to be happening and going on this week. In fact, our very own Fred Jackson, very dear to our heart and friend of the program here, very big Buffalo Bill, beloved Buffalo Bill, I should say, by so many fans out there. He said he wants to get back in football. Well, he has a chance now to showcase himself in the Spring League, and Brian joins us to talk about this league. Thank you very much, Brian. It's Sal, it's Donald. Really appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to be with you guys this morning.
Tell us a little bit about how this all came together, the Spring League, Brian.
Well, the Spring League, as you know, we played our inaugural season this past April, and the whole concept of it is really modeled at close to replicating the NBA Summer League, whereas we know there needs to be an additional platform out there that's going to help to develop potential NFL prospects. And in some cases, a lot of the guys participate in this league have NFL experience. You know, we bring a sprinkling of veterans into the league for name recognition. But our core player is still a 23, 24-year-old developmental guy, maybe a guy who's had, you know, practice experience or practice squad experience in the NFL. But ultimately, it is the Spring League is positioned at this point as the de facto D-League for the National Football League. And we had a tremendous first season in April. We had over 10 NFL teams attend, multiple scouts. And to date, we've had over 20% of our players either be signed or return to NFL camp. So it's a very useful platform and something we wanted to kind of expand upon. I spoke to several clubs and asked them, you know, what might be another good time to have something of this nature. And they all thought that having one or having at least a showcase or something to see players right before the start of NFL training camps would be valuable. And so we were quite ambitious. We put this together in less than 3 months, but we're very excited. We're going to be playing Saturday night at Napa Memorial Stadium in Napa, California.
Now, Brian, you said this is essentially, you know, like the D League for the NBA. After your first inaugural season, how the NFL look at that? Did they decide, okay, we want to really partner with you guys, or still just team by team coming in as scouts to see the guys play?
Well, yeah, and I think that's a fair question. But the one thing I would always point out is that the NFL, the league office, is its own separate entity. But the owners and really about 7 or 8 of them essentially run the National Football League. And so I happen to be, you know, I have a very good relationship with Fred Smith, who is the CEO of FedEx, and he also happens to be a minority owner in the Washington Redskins. And I think he framed it very well. I was very ambitious, and I really approached the NFL on several occasions about this, and there definitely seems to be interest there from their front. But he told me, he said, look, Brian, don't worry about the league office. Focus your efforts on getting the teams there. If the teams get guys there, if they can pull guys out of your league, then the support is going to come, and before you know it, there will be some sort of official relationship in place. And so I've taken his advice really to heart and have been more than cordial, I would say, with many NFL clubs and all of them that attended our first season down at the Greenbrier in West Virginia were extremely complimentary. They thought the talent there was exceptional, and a lot of them were calling their owners or meeting with front office personnel after they attended to tell them that they think this is a great concept, and And many of the teams also offered any support that we needed. And that's something I should emphasize. Said, listen, how can we help you with this? And so I think we're on the right path, and I think we're building something to be more official in the near term.
So where can you go from here with this, Ryan? It sounds like it's something that really, you know, you can continue on, you can make bigger, it can grow. What do you envision going forward with the Spring League as far as the NFL maybe, you know, partnering up or however big this can get?
Well, the one thing I'll tell you is that we have some really compelling stories of the guys that are taking part in the Spring League. And I'll give you an example is that one of the – I know you mentioned, Fred Jackson – but Anthony Dixon is taking part.
Yep.
Donnie Henderson is one of our coaches, and I know he was a member of the coaching staff at Buffalo. And so we certainly have several players that have ties, and we just signed Glenn Coffey a few days ago. So Glenn Coffey is here, and he's got a great story being a former 49er, a high-round draft pick, and after a year he decided to join the military. Now effectively is trying to pursue a chance to be seen or signed by an NFL club again. But I guess to answer your question in short, we feel like we've got a great concept. We've proven out our platform in our very first season with the number of success stories that we have and the players that we have going back to the NFL. So I think we're going to grow it maybe by the number of teams we have involved in the membership. We're going to try to position ourselves, I think, in a different market next year and be in one city, maybe similar to the NBA Summer League and be set up in a Las Vegas or a municipality such as Austin, Texas. And we've also drawn a lot of interest from our media. So we've had some really unique and interested parties in our media and having more of a broadcast, a bigger broadcast platform in 18 and beyond.
As you speak about the media and the media really taking a liking to it and you guys want to be more involved and have more media coming, what about the fans? How was the fan attendance at the down in West Virginia?
Well, I tell you, you know, we were in a pretty remote area. I don't know if you've ever tried to get to the Greenbrier, but let me just tell you that the nearest major airport is Roanoke, Virginia, and I can assure you that's not a major airport. So it was difficult to get fans there, and I think that we had fans from afar, but it wasn't located within an ideal proximity of major fan bases. But I will tell you this, and I think this is really an important point to make here, is that I think right now I feel that there's a major disconnect between the traditional football fan and the professional football player. And I think that one thing that Minor League Baseball has done for Major League Baseball, or one thing that the D-League is doing for the NBA, and the D-League, as you know, is tremendously successful right now and growing in membership each year, is that they find a way to get fans involved at a lower level. Fans get an opportunity to come and watch Spring League players and say, you know what? I saw that player, and now he's playing for the Atlanta Falcons, and I got a chance to go down the field after the game. He picked up my kid. He signed autographs. That's just the kind of accessibility that, unfortunately, as much as I appreciate the NFL, they really don't afford fans with that sort of access. Nor, you know, I would take the position that go find a diehard Buffalo Bills fan to name seven players on the Buffalo Bills roster right now, and they might have a hard time doing that. So, I think the fact is that we're trying to connect fans at a level where they can really get to know the player and the intimacy of it, and we've made it a very family-friendly version of football, and that's something we're very proud of and something we're trying to build upon.
Ryan Woods joins us here on the John Murphy Show. He's the CEO of the Spring League, and by the way, you can follow them on Twitter. They do have a Twitter account. It is right there, those three new words, the Spring League. It's an instructional league and showcase for professional football talent. They have the showcase going on this week. They're going to play on Saturday night in Napa. It's going to be at Napa Memorial Stadium. Fred Jackson will be a part of that. Booby Dixon will be a part of that. Tell us about how that will work. Like, just a little bit about the actual showcase itself that's happening this week.
Yeah, well, we're calling it a showcase because obviously we're only in town for a few days. Several members, or I should say several, but a good number of our roster from the Spring League back in April are taking part in this, and that includes Josh Robinson, that includes Anthony Dixon, and numerous other players. But because it's a showcase format, we're only going to have a few days. We're actually hitting the practice field for the first time this afternoon. We'll have a few days of practice, a walkthrough on Friday, and then we'll play an NFL regulation rules game Saturday night. We've moved our kickoff time up because it just so happens that I think the Napa Valley is going to experience a little bit of a heat wave this weekend, so we've moved our kickoff to 6 p.m. But the game is going to be televised by Flow Sports, which is a direct-to-consumer, over-the-top platform based out of Austin, Texas, that's really doing a great job with production in the over-the-top industry. They're going to be simulcasting parts of the game to Facebook Live and Twitter. So fans all over the country and all over the globe, for that matter, can tune in and watch it. But they're going to see an NFL-style game with a lot of very talented players.
Now, Brian, you talked about a lot of different things that goes into this. You talked about wanting to be in one place like the NBA Summer League. You talked about the different teams that are coming in. I guess the one question that I do have for you is, what teams have reached out to you to say, listen, we're going to be there this week?
Well, that's a fair question, but I will tell you that while not all the teams will have representatives here in person, I have already been in conversations and have been contacted by the Dallas Cowboys. I've been contacted by the Detroit Lions, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Minnesota Vikings, the LA Chargers, the Oakland Raiders. You name it, most of the teams have reached out. They already, they want rosters, they want practice film, they want game film. The pro director for the Oakland Raiders, for instance, just happens to be in Greece this week, and so he sent me a note saying, I'd love to be there, but I'm not going to make it. But we will have, if I'm correct, we will have the Denver Broncos in attendance this afternoon. The Minnesota Vikings will be in attendance tomorrow and Thursday. The Chargers will be in attendance at the game. And I think the Lions and a few other teams are about to confirm. So we don't expect maybe as big of attendance that we had, just given the time of year that a lot of the NFL All right. front offices tend to take vacation time right before training camps open. But even the teams that aren't planning to attend have already reached out and requested game film and practice film. So there's certainly an interest from the NFL community as far as maybe trying to find a few players there.
And Brian, I mean, these guys could, I mean, they're essentially just, they're free agents. I mean, if they could have a really good week and they could sign a contract, I mean, heck, even before Saturday's game, but maybe they could walk off the field on Saturday, sign a contract with an NFL team, right?
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. So the bottom line is there is a opportunity for these guys to be seen. And I mean, I'll tell you this. I spoke to Mark Hunt, who's the pro director for the Carolina Panthers, and he told me that, look, every year right before training camp, we tend to bring in around 20 guys just to see where people are. You start training camp and injuries happen almost immediately, not to mention that you'll have guys that you think are going to be healthy or coming off an injury and aren't. And so position moves, or I should say roster moves, start happening on day one with 90 guys in camp. So he said, look, Mark said, you're just taking this a step further by having guys in helmets and shoulder pads so we can actually see guys run around and play a live game that's simulated at NFL speed. So I think that, again, this is an ideal opportunity right before training camp starts for some of these guys to show where they're at. And even a guy like Glenn Coffey or a guy like, I mean, one thing I'll tell you is that Fred Jackson was active 2 years ago at the age of 34. And Fred Jackson showed up here yesterday, and he is in tremendous shape.
Yep.
So I'm really excited to see what he does at practice today because the guy can still play. He's not the rule. You don't like to keep 35, 36-year-old running backs around the NFL. Everybody knows that. But Fred's a guy that people should look at because he's in shape, and he seems to be able to play, still play the game at a high level.
Yeah, I saw Fred at Jim Kelly's gala just a few weeks ago, and him and I had a lengthy conversation about this. And here's the thing. He's realistic about his situation. He knows exactly what you said, but he's hoping that there's a situation in training camp where, hey, there's always going to be a few running backs that go down, and he's going to be a guy that's going to be out there that says, I can come in, I can be a veteran who can understand your playbook right away and do this. This is an opportunity for him to show, yep, I'm in shape. I haven't just been eating donuts and sitting around the couch for a couple of years.
And I think taking that point a step farther, look at Glenn Coffey, okay? Glenn Coffey is drafted in the third round in 2009. So Glenn Coffey, by NFL definition, should be too old right now. But Glenn Coffey left the NFL after one season, goes into the U.S. military, and just in the last few months was reinstated by the NFL for any NFL or to be eligible. He's fulfilled his military commitment, and now any NFL club that wishes could, in fact, sign him. And my point would be on Glenn Coffey, another guy that showed up here yesterday, looks like he's in tremendous shape. What a great human being this guy is. I mean, what a selfless individual he is. We had a situation yesterday. We were a little short on hotel rooms. He said, Brian, put two guys in my room. Totally cool with that. So just a selfless individual, a great guy, and a guy I would tell the NFL team, he's not been taking the hits for the last several years. So he's only got 1 year. He's got maybe a little more life expectancy than a traditional guy you would think at the age of, 29 or 30.
Now, Brian, there was another league that surfaced, flag football league that Mike Vick and all of these guys played in a couple of weeks ago. Did you pay attention to that game, and would you take guys from that game and bring them over to your game?
I mean, look, Michael Vick to this day is still probably one of my most favorite athletes to watch, and I think people sometimes forget just how capable he was as an actual drop-back passer. Mm-hmm. There's some guys out there, like I look at a guy like Robert Griffin, and I think that he was very mobile, and after the injuries, he wasn't so mobile and not as valuable, and I'm not so sure he would have made it as a pure drop-back passer, where Michael Vick was an exceptional drop-back passer. He was a guy that I felt like could run and could throw, and so he was one of my favorites. If he ever said to me, I'd like to come in and play for a game, I would certainly allow him to do that. That being said, and I certainly applaud them for what they're trying to do, but, you know, we're working with a company right now called Visus that's patented a very, very safe helmet that kind of compresses like a car bumper upon impact. They're making the game safer. I think people are a little worried right now with all the information out there about concussions relating to the sport of football. We're doing our part to make the game safer, but certainly that's not our business model to be a flag football league. In the NFL, I'm not so sure what kind of benefit guys are going to get. And that's one of the things that we're doing. You know, we're putting guys in pads, and you're seeing guys running around. That goes even a step further than a practice squad, where there's no live repetition, there's no live impact. And right now, because of the way the CBA is set up in the NFL, offensive linemen and quarterback play is really starting to suffer. And so I think that's another thing that we can really develop is offensive linemen and quarterbacks.
Now, you said one thing about Mike Vick, and if he was to pose the question, or if he came and approached you about playing in your league, you would allow that. And the fact that you said allow leads me to another question. How many guys are you turning away from your league?
It's, I'm faced with a very difficult task, because with the showcase, we only really positioned ourselves in year one to have two teams. With the league in April, we had four. We're trying to get and involve as many players as we can. And there is, as you know, each year the NFL is going to cut their roster down late August, early September from 90 to a 53-man practice, 53-man active and a 10-man practice squad. You got all these capable, very talented individuals out there on the street. And so, yes, on a regular basis, we're turning away lots of players. We got a situation here right now. We've got almost 100 players. We over-reported. This never happened to me. We had guys show up we made maybe some clerical errors here and there, but essentially we've got a few more guys that we might actually have to release a few guys prior to the game on Saturday. So finding talent there's no shortage of it out there. It's definitely there.
So what is the vetting process then, Brian? I mean, obviously people are listening. There's a difference, you know, here in Buffalo, you might have like a semi-pro team, and pretty much anybody who wanted to ever put on the pads can go out there and suit up for the local Buffalo team. What is the vetting process for you? It doesn't sound like that. It sounds like, you know, these are guys that have played football, that are in a situation that they're trying to, you know, be serious about having a career in the league. It's not just Sal Capaccio walking off the John Murphy Show, going to Napa and playing a game.
That's true. Even though we did get an application from a 40-year-old trying to play fullback in the league, so we had to unfortunately, regretfully inform him that we couldn't take him. He was probably past his prime, and that you don't start playing professional football at the age of 40. But with all that being said, certainly we have an application process. Players have to pay an application fee. They go through a vetting process. Obviously, we're looking for guys that are talented. It's not a money grab for us by any means at all. We don't make a ton of money doing that. However, it certainly streamlines the process for us, because if we didn't, we would have thousands of people bothering us on a regular basis. Right. So this way we say, okay, if you're serious, you need to pay an application fee, you need to fill out the application. That will tell us that you're at least serious about this. And otherwise, we just get too many requests and too many players. The semi-pro guys that you're referring to, then those are the kind of guys that – the guys from parts unknown that walk in off the street that want to participate.
Brian, last thing before we let you go here, I've grown up watching lots of leagues try and fail. You know, they try to start up, and within a year, they're pretty much gone. We've seen it happen all over the place. We can talk about the USFLs of the world or the XFLs of the world, or several that have popped up that I don't even know what you want to call their monikers over the last few years and their letters. But why is that? You know, why has it been so hard to have a developmental league, let's say, and what separates this, and why will this be successful compared to the ones that have failed?
Well, I would tell you that the biggest thing is that we really put a lot of thought into our
business model when we prepared for this league. And I think sustainability is one thing we wanted to hone in on. And so the one thing is that we did right off the bat is we eliminated all of the major expenses that you would see associated with a traditional professional sports league. So when you're a professional sports league, and I use the Green Bay Packers as an example because those are the only ones that have public records because of the way they're set up as an ownership structure. Mm-hmm. So if the Green Bay Packers make $350, $360 million a year in revenue, they're spending about $330 million of that. And most of that revenue, most of their revenue they're spending is going to player payroll. So what we did is we looked at it and go, okay, look at the NBA Summer League. Majority of the players that participate in the NBA Summer League are not paid, and most people don't realize that. There's a lot of free agents in that league that are playing that are not being paid. They're given a hotel, they're given per diem, and they're flown back and forth, but that's it. So they even have to sign a waiver when they come in. They have to sign a waiver saying if they're injured, they will not hold the NBA club responsible for any medical bills related to that injury. So we eliminated the player payroll concept of our league. We knew that there was a need for a platform. We thought this would be an opportunity, not a paycheck. That was kind of our slogan, so to speak, from the get-go. But we took out the costs associated with having multiple venues. We have no team travel because we effectively house all the teams in one location. So we've eliminated all the major expenses. So we've got it down to a pretty good and manageable amount of money that it costs to run an operation like this. And we've got some really unique potential media deals on the horizon that could make this league successful and profitable by year two. And that's unheard of in the world of professional sports. So we're going to be at a slight loss this year, a slight loss, and most leagues lose several millions of dollars. And I think the biggest factor is most of them don't have a sustainable business model. Most of them have a model of we're going to get out there, we're going to play, we're going to try to get people in the stands, and we're going to hope that we can hang on long enough to get a media deal to save us. And I think all you have to do is look at Major League Soccer. It took them 20 years to get any sort of TV deal that was really worth anything. So I think that our business model is sustainable. I think we've got a great platform, and I think most importantly, in a very short period of time, we've already proved that out with the number of players we've returned to the NFL.
All right, Brian, well, give your pitch for everybody to pay attention, watch, whatever it is, social media, watching online, where the game is, when the game is. Give us the vitals one more time so everybody knows where they can catch this showcase.
Absolutely. Well, for more information on the Spring League, you can go to www.thespringleague.com. The game is Saturday night, July 15th. The kickoff is at 6 p.m. It's going to be televised by Flow Sports with a live simulcast to Twitter and Facebook Live. Fans can purchase tickets by going to our website, which is www.springleague.com. And you can follow us on Twitter, @TheSpringLeague, for up-to-date information. We'll be streaming some stuff from practice this afternoon, posting a lot of photos. But we're excited, and we're equally thankful to be taking part today on the John Murphy Show.
Well, thank you very much, and take care of Freddie for us, will you? All right?
You know what? He's a good guy. I really like Fred. He's a really good guy, so we're going to take care of him for sure.
Brian, thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate it. This was fascinating stuff, and good luck to you.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Talk soon.
That was Brian Woods joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Pretty interesting. I mean, I'm not going to Napa to watch the game, but if it was here, I'd go.
I'd go, too.
That'd be pretty cool.
I mean, he has some guys that you've seen. He has some young guys in there. I'd definitely go and see it. I mean,
that's cool.
The thirst for football in this country is so big anyway.
That's right.
That all you got to do is bring a couple of guys that people know, and it's like, oh, man, I want to go see if these guys still have it.
Yeah, and you know what? I think there's something romantic about fans who like to play GM who want to say, oh, that guy's good. Like, they should sign that guy. Like,
yeah.
If you can go to the game and say, oh, man, you see the way a guy moves? Like, my team should sign that guy. Every fan wants to do that. They want to be the guy who knows that guy's going to be a superstar, and they can hang their hat on that. So good luck to Brian, the Spring League. Follow him on Twitter, The Spring League. Freddie's going to be in it. Booby Dixon's going to be in it. I was looking at some of the rosters. I mean, Ricky Stanzel is in there.
Is Greg Hardy in
it? I don't even know. I didn't see that. But he said, who was the other guy? Glenn Coffey, the running back, who retired.
Yeah.
Goes to the military, comes
story.
Back. That's incredible, right? So good luck to him, and we'll see what happens with that the rest of this week. All right, Donald Jones with me, Sal Capaccio, filling in for Murph. We'll talk about our Twitter poll, which is really, really good right now because we got four choices, and they're all just about neck and neck even. Make sure you get your vote in. You've only about a half hour if you want us to reveal that to you if you want to get on board with that Twitter poll. And when we come back, Major League Baseball was talking about expansion. They have three cities in mind. I'll tell you about that. What about the NFL? I'll get Donald's thoughts on that. Should they think about expansion in the future? Maybe where would they go if they did that? Next on the John Murphy Show.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Real good stuff with Brian Woods, the CEO of the Spring League. Last segment. Hope you caught that. Already getting some good Twitter response on that. At Sal Sports on Twitter, at DAJones19. Also, my co-host here, Donald Jones. My name is Sal Capaccio, filling in for John Murphy. Thanks a lot for joining us here on the program. It is time for Real News, Fake News. We're going to get through that and get to that, I should say, and kind of go through a couple of these things that are out there that basically, I don't know, I guess agree or disagree with. Real News, Fake News, Donald. We'll see what you think, as always. Real News, Fake News brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. We'll start with Jalen Ramsey. Had a really nice rookie season last year for the Jacksonville Jaguars, but here's Real News, Fake News. Jalen Ramsey is a shutdown corner.
It's hard for me to put anyone in a shutdown corner league. That's tough for me. I think it's one guy that you can say is, you know, a shutdown corner, and that's Pat Peterson in this mm-hmm. league. I think Jalen Ramsey had a very good season last year as a rookie. I think he needs to do it, though, for a couple of years before you can say this guy is a true shutdown corner. There aren't many true shutdown. Now, there are some good corners in this league across the board. There are some very good corners in this league, but to call a guy a shutdown corner, that's tough to do. And I think there's only one guy, and that's Pat Peterson.
Yeah, I think Peters may be a guy even higher on my list than Jalen Ramsey at this point.
Right, right.
And he's going into his third year. But, exactly. I mean, I would if you're talking about young corners, I might take Peters over Jalen Ramsey at this point. I like Jalen Ramsey a lot, but I think that's really high praise there too early.
I mean, it's hard to be labeled as a shutdown corner, especially this early in his career. For me, shutdown corner, I think Deion Sanders, obviously right. You think Darrell Revis most recent, but Deion Sanders, a guy who can move inside and outside, play anybody and shut him down. It doesn't matter who you put me up against. I'm facing your number one guy.
He's taking
week.
The guy away.
Right. And I don't think Jalen Ramsey does that yet.
All right. Real News, Fake News. Here, our second one with Donald Jones is RG3. And I don't remember who actually reported this, but there's a couple stories out there about RG3 is a free agent. And the Real News, Fake News is RG3 is a free agent who is going under the radar this free agency period.
That is fake.
You were very emphatic about that. Why?
That is fake because RG3 is a guy who's a first-round draft pick. He got another shot out in Cleveland, and he was horrible out there. So I don't think he's going under the radar. I think he's just not good. He hasn't learned how to be a pocket passer really at all. So I just don't think he's good enough to be a quarterback in this league, and because of that, no, he's not under the radar. To be under the radar, that means, you know, this dude is good, but he's flying under the radar right now. No,
yeah,
that's not RG3.
I think, actually, there was an under radar. The guy I wrote about who was under the radar, the Bills signed, Gerald Hodges. I loved it. I wrote about it and
right.
said, here's a guy that is out there. I don't know why, but the Bills should look at him, and they ultimately did. I thought that was a really nice signing for them. Those are the under the radar guys.
Yeah, I mean, those are the guys that are under the radar. RG3 is definitely not under the radar. He's not a guy that – Gerald Hodges, when he came here, people are like, who's Gerald Hodges? You know, you have to really be like a reporter or a true, true football fan to know who Gerald Hodges was before he got here.
Right.
That's, to me, under the radar. He might
right.
be good, but he's under the radar. Everybody knows who RG3 is.
No doubt.
He's just not that good.
Totally, I agree. It's like that old thing where people always talk about, everybody says this guy's overrated, and I say, if everybody says he's overrated, he ain't overrated.
Right, exactly.
He can't be, right? He can't be then. All right, a couple of little stories I want to run by you. You have your former teammate, Marshawn Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
All right? We just talked about Marcus Peters. I want to give you this quote that Marcus Peters said about your former teammate, Marshawn Lynch, and I want to ask you a question about it. Marshawn has been known to be kind of quiet about things, and you know, he doesn't really go about his business necessarily being a talker. We know that of what happened in the Super Bowl, but he had a famous quote or something when he was doing an interview about how he likes to run through people's faces, essentially. Well, Marcus Peters was asked about facing Marshawn Lynch. And the reason why Marcus Peters was asked is Marcus is actually from Oakland, and he's a big Marshawn Lynch fan. But here was his quote. It's going to feel good for him, Peter said of Lynch's homecoming. It's going to be a good feeling. It's going to be a good feeling for Oakland. But when we come here, we're going to beat the dog blank out of him.
Right.
All right. Now, here's my question. How does Marshawn Lynch, the teammate who was the guy you said you loved in the locker room, what his mm-hmm. personality was like, how does he react to a quote like that when he reads it?
Marshawn Lynch is the type of guy who, you know, he laughs at things like this. And it's not to say like, oh, it's, nah, I don't really
laugh
care.
Laugh it off.
Yeah, he's going to laugh it off.
he's the type of guy that when he's laughing at you, he's getting serious at the same time. It's kind of hard to really.
So he's not saying, aha, that's nothing. He's right. saying, ha, 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 wait till I face him.
Exactly. That's the type of guy that he is. He's the type of guy that will run straight through you on the football field and then smile at you after he does it. You know, laugh at you after he does
right.
it. Like, yeah, I just ran straight through. Like, he's that type of dude. He'll run through you and get up like, hey, boy, you better come correct the next time because I'm going
right.
to run through you again. Like, he's that type of guy. So he's not going to respond with words. He's going to respond not with words, especially in, like, social media or anything. He's going to respond on the football field. And the fact of the matter is they have the same agent. All of those guys are from the Bay Area,
uh-huh.
including the agent.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sure they know each other already, and I'm sure there's some trash talk amongst each other.
I'm sure.
And they probably train together.
Yeah, by the way, the quote that I read to you, that is from Jimmy Durkin of the Bay Area News Group. He's the person who reported that quote from Marcus Peters. You know what I love about Marshawn, though? When he was asked why he wanted to play for Oakland to mm-hmm. come back, I just loved his response. It really spoke to me. Marshawn Lynch basically said, because he wants to be there for those fans for the last couple of years in Oakland. He knows they're leaving, and that's how much being in Oakland meant to him growing up and how much – and he said – and basically what he said was, and I'm paraphrasing, I want kids in Oakland to know that you can be an NFL player from this area like I did before it's too late because they're not going to have a team here anymore.
Right.
Man, that really spoke to me. That's the kind of guy this guy is, and you've talked about him a lot of what great teammate he was.
You know, he's a great teammate. But Marshawn Lynch is very, very prideful of the city of Oakland
yeah.
and being from that city. And he does so much in that city, no matter where when he was playing here, when he was up in Seattle, he was still doing so much in the city of Oakland. I don't care what people think about him because of your view of him from what is portrayed in the media about Marshawn. Marshawn Lynch does a lot of things for the kids and the youth and the people of the city of Oakland. He is Oakland. Like, that is his heart, you know, it's Oakland. And the fact that they are leaving the city of Oakland, he still is young. He's like 30, 31 years old. He's like, man, I still got a couple of years. I want to go and show the kids that you can be a guy or a person that comes from this city. You can make it to the NFL. You can play for this team. They're not going to have a team anymore. And I think ultimately – he saw that that team is a good team
yeah.
right now with the quarterback that they have, and he wants to be able to try to bring a Super Bowl to that city before they leave and go to Vegas.
Yeah, I agree, and I think he's going to have a nice year with Oakland.
Oh, yeah.
They have a really good offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they have a very good passing attack with Derek Carr. They're going to put up some video game numbers sometimes this year with that offense. I think
see.
The question is can they hold teams back on defense?
Right.
They have some good talent like Khalil Mack, but that was a problem at times for them last year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's going to be a nice piece for them because this is a team that I think we have to start talking about challenging. Maybe not the Patriots necessarily, but that next group after the Patriots in the AFC.
I think so. I thought last year that they were the only team that could challenge the Patriots in the playoffs, the
mm-hmm.
way they were playing.
Right.
And then Derek Carr got hurt, and it was like, oh, man, that's it. I do think that adding Marshawn Lynch is going to be huge for that offense, even though they did have Latavius Murray last year, and he was
right.
a good running back. You know, so their problems were on defense last year, even though they had Khalil Mack and those guys up front. The back end was horrible.
Right.
They couldn't stop the run. They just had pass rushers. And I think in the draft, that's what they focused on. They drafted a lot of guys on the defensive side of the ball, a lot of DBs, so that they can try to slow down passing games. We're going to see them here in Buffalo week 8.
Yeah, they're coming to Buffalo right before
October 29th.
The bye. Before the bye, I think?
It's after. It's like the second week after
okay.
the bye. So you have the bye, Tampa Bay, and then
yep.
and then the Raiders.
That's right.
So Marshawn Lynch will be coming back to Buffalo.
He will. Know? It'll be interesting. And, you know, the Raiders are going to be a good team. That's going to be a tough task for the Bills. But you're right about that. They did go out and they tried to grab a couple of DBs. In fact, that kid from Ohio State who had the issue, before
yep.
Conley, before he was
Conley,
before
who,
the draft.
Who a lot of – when you talk to a lot of scouts, they were like, listen – this guy is the same level as the other guy
right.
who went drafted, who was a Lattimore, and everybody was saying this is the best corner in the draft.
Yep.
Conley, when you talk to scouts, they were like, man, this dude is on the same level, you know. So I think that they made a good decision there. I don't know what's going on with his legal situation.
Right.
But then they drafted the kid, Obi Melanfonwu, the safety
right.
out of UConn, the big kid, you know. So still yet to be seen if he's going to be a good safety, but I know they went that direction, and they're trying to shore up the back end of that defense. They have a good team. As long as Derek Carr can stay healthy, they have a solid team that can challenge a team like the Patriots for the Super Bowl run.
It is not real news, fake news, but we do have. I do want to get your opinion on expansion. It's something that I've been thinking about with the story about Major League Baseball. So basically, Major League Baseball is talking about expanding, and there are three cities that Rob Manfred actually specifically mentioned. Montreal, who had a team before, the Expos, and it was very, very well attended, and the support was there in Montreal. Charlotte, North Carolina, who has a AAA team right now. Our Buffalo Bisons play against them sometimes. And Mexico City. Those are the three cities that they brought up for Major League Baseball for expansion. Got me thinking about NFL. It's been a while since the NFL expanded. The last time they expanded was 2002 with the Houston Texans.
Right.
What do you think about NFL expanding? Do you think that maybe it's become time? Because Major League Baseball, last time they did it was 98, and they're saying, okay, now it's maybe time now. Well, we're getting close to that time period then if you figure out the years and the gap for the NFL.
You know, I mean, how many teams do you end up with? Right now they have 32 teams in this league, and it's like, for me, 32 teams is enough in the league. You know, I don't think you need to get to 34, 36 teams. At that point, you probably have to expand the season and expand the playoffs, you know. You know, if that's what they wanted to do, then whatever. I think I like the 32 teams. In terms of where it would be, man,
You're already going to Vegas.
Yeah, you're already going to Vegas. I think they could probably get a team back into St. Louis, number one.
Okay.
I think St. Louis is a good city. I don't know if they would be able to get a new stadium. We all know
that's
what it's about.
But what cities, right? So let's say a city could do a stadium. I think you're right. St. Louis, how about San Diego? Go back there. They just lost their team, right?
They just lost their team.
I mean, you could go back to San Diego.
Yeah, if they could get a stadium deal done. The problem with California, the taxes are already so high. You know, it's like, how much more can you put on the residents of San Diego?
Right.
That would have to be straight hotel tax money and things like that to make it up, you know, once you put $2 billion into a new stadium. So I don't know if they can get stadiums done in California now that they have – they're building that one in
LA. And then you had some teams that really wanted to get in the NFL – over the last 10 years or so, San Antonio was a big one. Remember, they wanted the
Raiders. That is big.
They want to be there. Remember, we talked about that with Terrence yesterday. They hosted the Saints when the Saints were displaced because of Katrina.
Right.
They went to San Antonio. And then you always have Oklahoma City laying out there. They want to get involved in everything, it seems like.
Yeah, I don't know. Oklahoma City, you know, it's a smaller city. Small, very, very small market. I don't know if...
Hey, Buffalo, Kansas City, Green Bay, all small markets.
They are.
Right?
They are. Now, the difference is those are teams that have been in this thing for since the beginning.
Yeah, let's face it. If the NFL expanded today, Buffalo, Kansas City, and Green Bay most likely would not be on the list.
Right.
These are cities that were already in
as
traditional cities, of course. But if the NFL did it now and said decide where we're going to go, they wouldn't be high on the list because they're going to go to the big cities, the big markets with the sustainability. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Sal Capaccio with Donald Jones here on the John Murphy Show on WGR and MSG.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Brought to you by Advanced Alarm, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We learned what Steve Tasker thinks about Adam Gase, the head coach of the Miami Dolphins and the Dolphins in general heading in to 2017.
Very young demeanor, young, energetic guy. I mean, a lot like a college kid, man. Really energetic. And laughs all the time, having fun all the time, really energetic, running around and talking to guys. And you know, I was in there doing a game, and I was talking to Dan Marino, and we were standing there watching practice. And Gase comes in and kind of playfully kind of puts Marino in a headlock, and they start laughing and joking around because, you know, it's kind of energy he's got, right? So I'm like, you know, that players like playing for a guy like that. And I think they responded to what Adam Gase was selling last year. They got to the playoffs. I don't think it's the kind of locker room. Maybe it will be. We'll see. You know, they're not going to get complacent with it.
The Bills Wall of Famer and NFL and CBS analyst joined us for a full hour here in studio today. Also joining us on the line was Brian Woods, the CEO of the Spring League. It's a spring football league, and now it's a spring football showcase happening this weekend. Fred Jackson is going to be playing in it. It's going to happen Saturday night in Napa, California.
Fred Jackson was active 2 years ago at the age of 34, and Fred Jackson showed up here yesterday, and he is in tremendous shape.
Yep.
So I'm really excited to see what he does at practice today because the guy can still play. He's not the rule. You don't like to keep 35, 36-year-old running backs around the NFL. Everybody knows that. But Fred's a guy that people should look at because he's just he's in shape, and he seems to be able to play, you know, still play the game at a high level.
Sal Capaccio back here with Donald Jones. There's a couple minutes left in the program, and that gives us time to make sure that we get to our Twitter poll and kind of go through some of the choices here, because it looks like, to me, Donald, you can tell me if I'm wrong, maybe the closest Twitter poll we've ever had with four choices here on the John Murphy Show. I've never seen or heard, listening to you guys, watching and all that, any Twitter poll you've had that has been this close between the four. This is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about two guys still at 24%, Micah Hyde and Tre'Davious White. Zay Jones leading with 27, Reggie Ragland at 25. You know, I still would go with Micah Hyde just because of his position flexibility. I understand why people, you know, obviously playing wide receiver, the number two receiver spot is a position that people want to know who's going to be the number two receiving spot. Zay Jones was a guy that they traded up for in the second round to get. He was highly praised coming out by all of us who talked about him and who saw him play in college. So, you know, I understand why he has 27.
You know, I love Zay Jones. Everybody knows I loved him heading into the draft. He actually would be my number four choice in this, not even number one, two, or three.
Wow.
Because I think somebody on the defense who plays every play and not just can only impact a game when he has a ball thrown to him would have more of an impact. I think I would go Tre'Davious White on this.
Hmm.
It allows all the other DBs to kind of do some different things.
Right.
But good choice on Micah. Hi, thanks a lot for joining us today. Show with the Bulldog
up
next on WGR. We'll be back tomorrow at 12 noon.